At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Melissa Miller-Henson. Ms. Miller-Henson, you may begin.
Thanks. Actually, I think Mr. Steve Murray is going to take over, actually.
Good afternoon, everybody. So this is our first experience for this group for our Science Advisory Team webinar conference. And before we get too far into this, I would simply like to ask, I think, Evan, who will give some instructions with regard to what you should be seeing as a panelist and also perhaps some information for the public. So go ahead, please.
Sure. This is Evan Fox, a principal planner for the MLP Initiative. And just want to orient everyone to what you should be seeing on your screen if you're logged onto the GoToMeeting portion of this meeting. And you should see a box that basically shows a screen that Jason Vasquez is controlling and will be passing back and forth between various SAT members and presenters during our conference call today. And you won't be able to manipulate anything on that screen. You'll just be able to see the things that are being presented. So, for instance, right now you should see the SAT agenda with some of the call-in information there. For members of the Science Advisory Team, you should see on the right-hand side of your screen a toolbar that has a couple different options, one of which is a chat function that you can send chats back and forth to various people on the screen. And then for members of the public, you should also have that chat function as well as a question function. And if you have any technical problems during this call, I'll be monitoring that question list, and I'll try to follow up as best I can with any issues that you come across. In addition, as was mentioned at the very beginning of the call, everyone, all members of the public, are on mute for the majority of the meeting here. During public comment period, we will be able to unmute you. And if the operator can maybe fill in here and just say how you're able to unmute yourself or how you'll be unmuted to be able to participate during that question period, that would be great.
Sure. If you have a question during that time, you press star, then one on your touch-tone phone.
So star, then one during those designated question periods, and we will alert you to those as they come about during the call. So I think that's it, Steve. I can hand it back to you.
Any questions from SAT panelists with regard to the functionality of this part?
So this is Dominic. I guess I'm just confirming that if we do want to speak during the discussion period, we still do that verbally?
Okay, for our SAT panelists, we'll be keeping a speakers list here. I will be doing that. We'll be doing it verbally. So I will be asking you from time to time who would like to speak, and what you'll need to do is simply give me your name. I'll have to keep a list of that, and then I will be calling those speakers when we get to the point where questions and comments are required. Does that sound okay to everybody?
Yeah.
So I'll be prompting you verbally. You just need to simply say, you know, Dominic, I'd like to talk. Pete, I'd like to talk. Just give me your name so I can keep it going that way, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, just a quick overview with regard to the agenda. I think you all have that in front of you. Now, I have no control over what you're seeing, so we should be looking at the agenda. And the agenda starts off with some welcoming remarks. We're going to hear some things from Ken Wiseman, some updates, and then we're going to have a briefing on the SAT MPA proposal evaluation work team. We will then be going into the meat of our business today, which is the MPA design guidelines and evaluation methods. And we want to particularly call your attention to documents A1, A3, and B2 for this first part of the meeting that deals with habitat representation and habitat replication. Our objective is to discuss these documents. We have some presentations, and what we hope to do is to approve and is make decisions about these habitat representation and habitat replication areas, and that would mean documents A1, A3, B2 in particular. We will, after we move through those two particular areas, we'll be taking a break. At that break, we will be asking for public comment. That public comment that's to come at the break is much more general in terms of what the comments would be directed towards. We will be giving the public opportunities to comment on any of the items that we will be working on to vote on to approve. And at that point in time, when the public is asked to, if they have questions or comments, they will need to restrict them to the topic at hand so we can move through through this agenda. After the break, we will be working on the design guidelines and evaluation methods. Again, we'll be continuing that. But what we'll be hearing then mostly will be updates. Updates on spacing guidelines and evaluation methods, update on model outputs and the uses of methods and evaluation, updates from the level of protection group. We will then move to another approval item, which will be the document F1, which will be the birds and mammals evaluation methods, the birds and mammals guidelines and evaluation methods document. We'll be concluding the meeting with some comments or from some folks here about questions from the RSG, and then we'll wrap up and let you all know what we're looking at for the next meeting, which is coming up on January 27th. We do have a few things to do here at the end of the day. We need to identify SAT members who can attend the 29th RSG work session, and that's essentially what we have before us. Anybody have any questions about the agenda? Hearing none, and that's how we'll move along. We're going to turn the meeting over to Ken Weissman, who will be providing some updates for us.
Sorry for just a moment, Ken, before you start. Steve, we need to make sure that we take a roll call of the members of the Science Advisory Team to confirm who's in attendance.
Don't we have them listed on the call-in?
We just, for the audio taping of this, we should have a roll call.
Okay. Adam Frimodig.
I'm sorry, no, just the Science Advisory Team member.
Well, okay, so I don't have a straight list of those folks in front of me here.
Okay.
Who does?
Do you like me to do that?
Go ahead.
Okay, let me pull up my list real quick. All right, Dr. Larry Allen.
Here.
Dr. Richard Ambrose. Eric Bjorkstedt. Mark Carr.
Mark's on mute. He's here.
I was going to say, are folks muted?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'm here.
Better unmute yourself, folks, so you can answer real quickly.
Susan Shivers.
Here.
Chris Costello. Paul Dayton.
I'm here.
Steve Gaines. Dominic Gregorio.
Here, and I do have one question before we start in, so I'll wait till everybody's done with the roll call.
Ray Hilborn. John Larger, I know John's coming in late. He'll be in at 2 p.m. Same with Steve Morgan. He'll be in at about 1:30, 2 p.m. Steve Murray, of course, you're on.
Here.
Dan Pondella.
Here.
Pete Raimondi.
Here.
Dan Robinette.
Here.
Astrid Scholl. I believe Astrid's on, but maybe she's muted. Stephen
Stowe.
Can you
hear me now?
Yes, now we can hear you.
Great, thanks.
Stephen Stowe?
Who?
Stephen Stowe? Steve Weisberg? And Steve Wirtz?
Here.
Okay.
I think we have a few more people than that who are here at the moment. Do we have any trouble with the muting button part of this?
Why don't you call the people that you heard call in, just so that we know that you heard us?
Don't have that. All we have up are the people who have called in and who are on the webinar. They're listed in the names in front of us. You probably all can see those, too.
Not if I'm on my phone.
Yeah, he's not on the webinar. So folks that we didn't hear from that appear to be on the webinar. I'm not seeing. Rich Ambrose is the only one I'm seeing. Rich Ambrose and Stephen Stoves are the only two I see on the webinar who didn't respond.
The Astrid.
I thought I heard Astrid.
Yeah, I didn't hear Astrid. I've got this is Jason, and I've got a couple people on as panelists that I think are having trouble getting through the audio part of this. Becky Oda being one of them. Are you on, Becky?
Okay, so Stephen Stoves is on. He was having trouble unmuting.
And Rich Ambrose is also having trouble.
Okay, so we have both of them. They can hear us. We just can't hear them. So staff will work with them via the chat function to get that fixed.
Okay. Are you ready to go to Ken?
Well, Steve, this is Dominic. I just had one quick question.
Go ahead.
So it has to do with ex parte. And maybe this is really a question for Melissa. I'm not sure. But Steve Weisberg and I both received an email from a member of the stakeholder group. Is that something that we're supposed to report to you guys?
I guess it depends on what it is that the stakeholder was communicating.
Well, it was questions and comments about the water quality issues.
Okay, so, if they're just asking you clarifying questions, I don't think that would be anything that you would have to report. If they are providing you with information that could potentially influence the outcome of a decision, then that is something you should share with the group.
Okay, so it's the former, so it sounds like it's not a problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Excuse me, this is a conference operator. I was able to unmute a few of the speakers that you were asking for earlier, Rich, Becky, and Astra. Their lines are open now.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, can you hear me now? It's Astrid.
We can hear you.
And this is Rich Ambrose. Can you hear me?
Yep.
We can.
Okay, thanks.
And then, operator, just in case, Stephen Stoves is another one who was having difficulty getting through.
Okay. I'll look for his line. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, were you all able to hear us the whole time?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to Ken.
Thank you, Chairman Steve. What I wanted to report on, and I have Don Beninhoven is on the line as well, but that the action yesterday of the Blue Ribbon Task Force regarding the Department of Defense request to have no MLPAs put on active fire areas, that was deferred until the BRTF's next meeting, when they would like to have a report from the SAT. And basically the BRTF is requesting that the SAT provide a description of the ecological characteristics of the islands used by the military, the ecological linkages between those and other islands and the mainland coast of Southern California, and any other important considerations for MPA network design. And realizing that you've already done a lot of work and summarizing that work in a way so we can try to give direction to the stakeholders, but that before the BRTF wants to make any policy decisions, they want to make sure that you can educate them on all that the islands have to offer and can make a report at their next meeting.
Questions about this for Ken? Anybody?
Let me, this is Don Beninhoven, Chair of the Blue Ribbon Task Force. Let me just add what Ken has said. This is, as you know, become an extremely important issue. We've had a few preliminary meetings with representatives of the Department of Defense. The key issue turns out to be the scientific analysis that Ken just asked if you would help us with, and that is the connection between the three islands, San Nicolas and San Clemente and Catalina, as well as the Petaluma shoreline area. And so that the task force yesterday at their meeting requested that you assist us with that scientific information, and then also that information be presented at our next task force meeting, which is scheduled for the 26th of February, at which time they'll also ask for the Department of Defense to have representatives there to discuss their use of San Clemente Island. and so that all the information is put out on the table at that point. Prior to that presentation on February 26th, we'd like to have a representative of a science advisory group to meet with a small working group, which would consist of Ken and some staff, as well as myself and a subcommittee of the task force, to meet with representatives of the Department of Defense to see what options are open to discussion as to what can be done for protection of the fisheries in and around those two, particularly those two islands, but as well as Camp Pendleton shoreline. So that it's become a major issue for us. It's a big area, of course, and your scientific evaluation of the connection between those islands is going to be vital to that discussion. And so we thank you ahead of time for helping us with it.
Can I ask a question, Steve? What is the procedure for asking a question?
Just tell me you want to talk.
I want to talk.
Peter.
For those people that were on the Central Coast, or for Jason or for Melissa, what was done at Vandenberg? Was there a similar objection raised and then it was passed over, or did it ever come up?
It did come up, and it was, as I understand Melissa, why don't you, or Ken, Melissa, why don't you were there. Why don't you respond to that? It was a major issue, but it's quite different than this issue.
So during the Central Coast process, we had a military representative on the stakeholder group who raised concerns about the possibility of MPAs being placed offshore their areas. And over the course of many months, there were some discussions. There were letters and memos that went back and forth. Essentially, the issue was elevated to the California Resources Agency and the Department of Fish and Game, and they worked directly with the military. Ultimately, the regional stakeholder group did develop a proposal, and the Blue Ribbon Task Force forwarded a proposal that included an MPA offshore Vandenberg. And through negotiations with the military, there was an MOU established between the state and the military about its activities and what would be allowed to continue in that MPA.
Anybody else like to have a question or make a comment on this at the moment?
This is Ken Wiseman, and I think,
Ken?
Too, obviously the Navy had different interests than the Air Force, and that was one of the reasons that Becky Oden and I from the department worked with the Department of Defense to bring this issue forward so we could get commentary, we can get the kind of discussion we have going now because of their concerns with their expanding live fire areas. And as Chairman Benninghoven said, the opportunity for a subgroup of the BRTF with Becky and I, and hopefully co-chair Steve, that we can continue the dialogue and get as many options out on the table so we can give the stakeholders direction at the earliest possible time.
Questions?
Yeah, this is Dominic.
Go ahead, Dominic.
So are we forming, or is there a suggestion that a subgroup of the SAT be formed to address this issue specifically, or are we going to rely on an existing subgroup?
So this is Steve. So, you know, this has all happened within about 4 days, and at least in terms of how we're looking at proceeding, what I suggest we do is let's hold until the end of the meeting, and then let's discuss how to proceed from there. We can be thinking about it in the interim. But what I understand that would work best right now is to create a new subgroup, a small group of people with representatives from some other places as well to look at this. But I think from the science standpoint, you know, I think that we need to probably have a focus group. And we would probably work best if we had specific questions that were asked of us by the Blue Ribbon Task Force that we would then be able to write science answers to. Of course, these would be science questions.
And at this point, Steve, I think that's why, and it was, as I mentioned at the BRTF meeting, it was the work that you've done to date and the science team, the presentations of the currents and where we saw Clemente and especially Catalina tied together as their own bioregion that triggered Becky Owen and I to reach out to the Department of Defense and say we need to start having this discussion, because clearly there's going to be, if as our recommendation was, science was going to drive the process, that we needed to understand that better. So I think at this point, although we may get to specific questions, if we just take what the work that you already have and the expertise that you have on the SAT, which is why we tried to, I'll formalize this request, but just that we get the description of the ecological characteristics and the linkages between the islands and the mainland, any other important considerations in the design. We don't want to put you in the position of having to make a policy decision, but we want to get as much of the science forward as we can, and I think then specific questions may evolve from that as potential areas are designated where you may be asked, as in the past, to talk about levels of protection or how this might relate. And we're looking for a lot of different options there. But at this point, just trying to understand the characteristics of the islands and the linkages that were done and that basically triggered this discussion.
Additional questions from SAD members? Okay, I hear nothing at the moment. So is everybody okay with my suggestion that we'll take this up again at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
All right.
And this is Don Benningham. Just thank you very much for your assistance with this.
Well, we thank you for taking up the issue with us.
I'm sorry, Steve, just a quick question. One more SAT member who was having issues getting in. Steve Weisberg, are you able to speak yet? Steve has actually been on the phone since about 1:10, so he's on the line. He can hear, but he hasn't been able to speak. So I would like to ask the operator if you can locate Mr. Weisberg and make sure that he has the ability to speak, we would greatly appreciate it.
Okay, I'll locate the line.
Steve, are you there? Steve Weisberg? Not yet. Okay, Melissa, do you have any updates to provide?
Steve, this is Jason.
Yeah.
I have two.
Jason, go ahead.
Great, thanks. So just quickly, I wanted to make you guys aware of a couple of handouts that were provided to you via email just prior to this meeting. One is the meeting summary from your December 17th meeting. I won't show that on screen. I don't think we really need to go through that. But the other one that I will show on screen now, you guys should see it here in a second, is a summary of the comments that we received from SAT members that were not part of work groups on the Key and Unique Habitats document and the beach manipulation document. At December 17th, we asked you to provide via email to me comments on those documents, and we noted that we would collate them for you and provide them back to you. So that's one of the handouts, and we will be talking about the Key and Unique Habitats bit today, so I wanted to make sure you guys were aware of those and had a chance to look at them. That's all I've got for that, Steve. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Steve Weisberg's line is open now.
Steve, you're there.
Yes, I am. I was wondering why you weren't responding to my question.
Well, I think that we had it fixed to make sure you couldn't ask any.
the question I was going to raise is we received some pretty cogent letters regarding the military islands. The question that we were asked doesn't seem to address the questions that they were addressing to the scientific advisory team. Should we be charging? I don't know. These were just mailed to us yesterday, but
right.
So maybe not everybody's had a chance to see them. But I thought they were pretty cogent and had a lot of very clear questions.
I can't help you on that until because I think that we have to really look at this and digest this and then decide how we're going to proceed from here. But I certainly, this is Steve Murray, I certainly agree with you that there was content in there that we should probably respond to and address. And I think there's some other things that weren't said that we probably need to talk about and address from the science standpoint. But it's very difficult to do that under the circumstances with regard to the information that we've had, when we've gotten it, and everything else. So I think we're going to wind up leaving with a few people who will work on this and figure out what we're going to do. And the good news is that we have another meeting coming up pretty shortly. So we probably can get that done between now and the next meeting be well prepared to do what needs to be done within the time frame that the Blue Ribbon Task Force has asked.
Okay.
So I think that's the plan, I think, that we would need to invoke. Is everybody okay with that? If you're going to be a dissent, if you dissent, please say so. Otherwise, we'll assume that everybody's good. Usually we can see all the heads nodding, but I'm not able to do that right now.
Steve, it's Paul Dayton phone. And the only thing that worried me is that I thought that some of those comments that Steve Weisberg noticed were pretty relevant, especially the ones about the biology of the islands. So it seems to me that some of the comments from the science, from the stakeholders group were very appropriate to the questions that were being asked of us, and it would be really good to make sure that we have Engel's, especially Jack Engel's,
sure,
comments on the record.
I think we need to consider everything that we have access to and our own views on it, and then prepare a response in conjunction with what's being asked for. And I think I do think it would be helpful. And I'll say it again, Ken and Don, if you're still on the line, if you can try to put in writing exactly what you think you really want, what do you want, so we can look at that very carefully and then address the specifics that you're looking for.
I will send that to you, Steve, as the language that I'd read out to you, and that to tap into the expertise and hopefully have a presentation with as much as we have available at next month's Blue Ribbon Task Force, so that all that information can be on the table as we sort the issue out.
Okay. So I think we should move on now to the agenda. Jason, you had your updates. Go ahead, Jason.
Thanks, Steve. No, we just went through the two updates. That was all I had for those, and we can turn it over to Evan, I think.
Any more updates from staff? Okay, Evan, we're on item one on the agenda, briefing on the SAT-MPA proposal evaluation work team. We were to get to this at 1:20, so we're running a little behind. Evan, you have the floor.
Okay, I'll try to run through this pretty quickly. So one of the main tasks of the science advisory team is to evaluate marine protected area proposals that are generated through the MLPA process. And this short memo that's 2 pages long outlines exactly what that task entails. And what we need to do today is to start to think about identifying people that will conduct this evaluation. And what I want to do is just run through really briefly what that what that requires. So if you kind of scroll down through the memo, and I'll do it here on the screen, you can see there are basically three rounds of marine protected.
Just one quick thing. We can't scroll. So any scrolling has to be done by you.
That's right. So you should see right now at the top of your screen something says rounds of proposal development and expected time frame. So in what it shows on the table there are three different rounds of marine protected area development. And what will happen is in that first column, at that date, the regional stakeholder group will finalize a proposal of or several proposals for marine protected areas. And following that date, the science advisory team will have a period of time to evaluate those proposals and then present those evaluations to the science advisory team, and then once approved later to the regional stakeholder group. And something that will also be part of that evaluation process is the evaluation of external proposals that are submitted to the process. And in the past, what we've had was something on the order of 10 or so proposals to evaluate in the first round, and then a smaller number in subsequent rounds. So we're not exactly sure how many to expect this time, but something in that range. So those dates are outlined here in the memo, and I'm going to scroll down a little bit more just to give you a sense of what those components of the evaluation will be. So several science advisory work groups have been working on several pieces of these evaluations, but more or less they break out into 7 different distinct evaluations that I've listed here. So there's habitat representation, habitat replication, MPA size, spacing between MPAs, benefits to marine birds and mammals, bioeconomic models, and water and sediment quality. So these are the evaluations that have kind of dropped out so far that the science advisory team has been working on. And what we'd like to do is kind of finalize that group of people that will be conducting those evaluations for each round of MPA proposal development. And just a note here, all of these, we are expecting each of these evaluations to be conducted for all three rounds of MPA proposal development, with the exception of the water and sediment quality evaluation, which Dominic and Steve and crew have, I've heard so far, planning on doing in the second and third rounds of evaluation, not the first round. And so just the kind of final part of this memo just outlines that what we'd really like to have are people that both have the availability to be able to conduct these evaluations in the time frame outlined at the top of the memo, and people that have expertise in kind of each one of these areas. So those folks that have been working on those work groups that kind of relate to each one of these evaluations would be ideal. So I think with that, Jason, we wanted to try to, I don't know, take nominations or somehow identify people that would be interested in working on this work team.
Yeah, that's correct, Evan. What we'd like folks to do is to read that handout and think about what's involved in that and your areas of expertise and what goes on with the evaluations. And then between now and your meeting on Tuesday, if you can send me and the SAT support list and the SAT listserv an email noting that you're volunteering for that work team, on the 27th, we'll come back and confirm folks for that work team.
So a couple of quick questions here in review. You are looking at folks to identify which of those areas they would serve in. So if you can scroll this to the list of evaluation items, can you do that? It'd be nice if we could scroll, but we can't. Can somebody scroll that down a little bit?
It should be there now.
There you go. So you see this. Everybody should see this, the components of the evaluations, starting with habitat representation and ending with water and sediment quality. So if I understand this correctly, you would like folks to volunteer to participate in one of those areas. And then what's the total size of the group that you're looking for?
I think on the order of 7 or 8 people is what we had in the past.
Okay. So the instructions are then to send Jason, I believe, an email that would indicate your willingness to serve as an evaluation team member, and then you would indicate whether that would be habitat representation or MPA size or which of these particular evaluation components that you would be willing to serve as an evaluator. Does that sound fair?
I think that does, Steve. This is Evan Fox, and I would just say that in the past, sometimes a SAT member had contributed to multiple evaluations.
Sure.
For instance, habitat replication and representation was conducted by the same person last time, so that's okay, too.
Steve,
could you read off the list that we're supposed to respond to, because I have nothing to work with?
Well, it's habitat representation, habitat replication, MPA size, spacing between MPAs, benefits to marine birds and mammals, bioeconomic models, and water and sediment quality. So habitat representation, habitat replication, MPA size, spacing between MPAs, benefits to marine birds and mammals, bioeconomic models, and water and sediment quality. And so your instructions are to send Jason an email and indicate which of those, one or more of those areas, that you would be willing to serve as a part of the evaluation team, and then we'll work on that.
Thanks.
Offline. Fair enough?
Thanks.
Any questions or comments on this?
Hey, Steve, this is Dan. I have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
When I look at these evaluation criteria, maybe just because I'm a fish guy, it seems like why is there not a category for the benefits to fishes and invertebrates, the organisms that we're really going to protect with these marine protected areas? It seems like you guys are skirting around the data sets in Southern California, and maybe you're kind of going at them sideways with the replication or representation or MPA size models. But I don't really see anything that directly addresses the distribution of fishes and invertebrates in these evaluations. Am I just missing something here, or can someone address that, please?
This this is Evan Fox, and maybe I can help. I think that all of the evaluations, with the exception of marine birds and mammals, will, and maybe perhaps the water quality part, but that as well, really get at the fish and invertebrates. The MPA size and spacing guidelines, for instance, are based on a suite of many different fish and invertebrate species. And I think that the habitat replication and representation analyses also really get at those kind of fish and invertebrate suites of species, kind of using habitat as a surrogate. So I believe that those do address what you're talking about, but maybe other science advisory team members can.
It's just that when I've looked at all the models, everyone that has presented so far in this process, no one has shown us a single data-driven model when there's an ample amount of data throughout the bite, and much of which has already been contributed to this process. I mean, we uploaded them to the GIS people months ago, and with the idea that perhaps that would be included in the stakeholders, the RSG's process, and how they would determine where they would, you know, draw their boundaries. But it seems like that's kind of been dropped, or at least I've never seen any information with actual data products from real-time data, as opposed to looking at this from the other end of the spectrum, which is a straight modeling perspective. And so I don't really see that. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing it, but I've read every single thing that's come out.
Dan, this is Larry.
Yeah.
Have you read the most recent model document that was produced? It looks like Will.
The bioeconomic one?
No, the summary of the ROMs. Anyway, it's got all the current fish species and invertebrates in it.
I didn't see that.
They rerun the ROMs models using those species. So it's a document I just got from Melissa.
Well, that would be included in the which
yeah,
one?
Yeah, and I think on that, and I have to agree with Evan that those considerations are put in the habitat representation, replication, size, spacing, all those things are
right. I just want to bring it up because I still it seems
well.
Like
I was
never
concerned, I'm concerned
anyway.
With it too, so that's why I thought I'd answer you.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting, but was this Dan Robinette or Dan Pondella?
Pondella.
Okay.
Dan Robinette. I just wanted to make a quick comment and just kind of reiterating what Evan said. The core analyses, you know, that the habitat representation and replication, those are really geared at fish and invertebrate habitats. These other analyses that kind of came out during the North Central Coast process were geared at bringing other things in that could also potentially benefit from MPA establishment. But the core analyses, those are already driven at benefits to fish and invertebrates. So, I mean, there's really, you know, your concern, I think this process is really still heavy on the fish and invertebrates, so I don't think that should be much of an issue. These other analyses are just trying to bring in other components that were kind of overlooked when you take this fish and invertebrate approach.
Any other questions on this? Anybody like to be recognized?
Steve Wirtz checking in.
Yes, Steve Wirtz.
Where do levels of protection fit in this scheme? Is it accumulation of these analyses, or is it a whole separate situation?
This is Evan Fox. Maybe I can weigh in again here. If you read the paragraph just below where these are listed, there are a couple aspects of this evaluation the SAT's been working on that actually apply to multiple things. So levels of protection is one thing, bioregions are another, and those are actually included in multiple analyses.
Anybody else?
Yeah, Steve, this is Astrid.
Astrid.
Curious, are we treating the socioeconomic impact analysis that EcoTrust has done in the other regions sort of as a parallel evaluation process that we do with staff, or do you want to recognize it in this SAT evaluation list?
I think we have to ask the staff folks what they're thinking on this.
Sure, this is Jason, Steve. Astrid, right now we've got it on a parallel track. We reviewed it in the SAT in the North Central Coast, and we'll be bringing it in at a future meeting. And we've got those methods from you sort of hashed out already. And so my plan is to try and pull a bit more of that together for our next meeting.
Got it. So we're not off the hook.
You're not off the hook. No, you wouldn't get off that easy.
Draft.
Definitely not. Let me just remind folks that there is a chat tool. You are able to go in there and type a message to any of the people here. We had one asking for an email address, and I see that one of our very alert staff, or very alert SAT members, has already responded to that. But feel free to use that chat tool. You type your message in, and then right below that you can scroll down and find who you want to send it to. Now, one thing I noticed is that I can't find Jason's name listed anywhere on the list of attendees, which means we can't send Jason a chat message unless there's another route to do that. Jason, do you have any comment on that?
Yep. Oddly enough, I am listed there as Melissa Miller Henson.
He's Melissa today.
The organizer on that.
Okay.
So there should be two Melissas. One is a panelist and the other is an organizer. The organizer is me, and that'll pop up on my screen, so you can just send that to Melissa.
So you send all Melissa's messages to Jason and all Jason's to Melissa's.
There you go.
Jason is the organizer, and obviously, you know, I don't know if the rest of you are seeing this. I'm trying to look at the list of attendees, but I can't keep the list of attendees open at the same time I can leave the chat open. And I think that what you're going to want to probably do is to leave the chat box open in case somebody sends you a message. So anyway, that's just a side. I think we're ready to go on now. Does anybody have any more comments on this? You know what to do. We're sending Jason the information. We've just had a blank on the screen here for me. Thank you. We're back. So we know what to do on this. Put yourself up for being a member of the evaluation team. Indicate to Jason which particular component or components you'd like to participate in, and we'll look at putting this team together and have it ready for discussion at our next meeting. I think we're ready to go on now to the first major item on this, which is habitat representation. This will be turned over to Mark Carr in a moment, but we want you to notice that there are three things that we're looking at doing here. First of all, we are looking at reviewing and approving the Key and Unique Habitats document. If you remember, last time we had discussed this document, and so there were revisions made, and that has been sent to you a day or so ago. That's document A1. Then we're going to have either Evan or Emily, who will brief us on what is available in terms of habitat data sets, and then we will move over to try to cope with reviewing and approving the habitat evaluation methods. And that document you should be looking at, this should be habitat representation evaluation methods, I believe. And that document you should be looking at would be document A3. So that's the progression we'll be using. So we're going to turn this over to Mark Carr at the moment. And I think we can all see Mark's desktop real coolly there. And so, Mark, you have it right now. Now, listen, as Mark goes about and makes his discussion, Mark, I would suggest that, and I'll help you here, but I would suggest that when you find places that you would like to ask for questions or comments, you should do that verbally, and I'll try to give you a little bit of help as we go, okay?
Got it. Thanks, Steve. So, as Steve mentioned, and I'm hoping we can blast through this Section 2A on habitat representation in less time than the 45 minutes allocated. And as Steve already directed you to the three documents that we'll be reviewing, Jason, are you or I going to run the actual controls on the presentation?
You've got it, Mark. So you've got control of the screen right now completely.
And so right now you guys presumably are looking at the Key and Unique Habitat document, the first page?
That's right.
Okay, thanks. So the first thing that we want to do in this 45-minute period is review and approve this Key and Unique Habitat document. And I just want to do this in two ways. I'm going to first just quickly give you an overview of this document by running across it, and you should have already received this. This is that A1 Key Unique Habs document that people received earlier. Note that there's four components to this. There's this first section on habitats identified in the MLPA or MPAs. And then the next section is is an actual description of the key habitats in the South Coast study region. And then the next section pertains to those key habitats that were set out separately as particularly important habitats of particular concern, although recognize these are still key habitats and not unique habitats. And then the last page prior to the literature site section is a review of the unique habitats, which now pertains to two particular habitats, the seeps, the oil seeps, and the shallow hydrothermal vents. So what I'm going to do now is bring over the PowerPoint presentation that you guys should have in front of you. And the first thing, again, is this list of the key habitats that were approved previously and are listed.
Really different today.
Notice that there's a handful of highlighted habitats, the surfgrass, estuaries, eelgrass, kelp, and pinnacles, and those are the ones that we'll turn to as key habitats of particular concern. And so the notable key habitats in this next slide indicate surfgrass is an important habitat along the open coast. It also identified San Diego Bay as a particularly ecologically important estuary complex and one that should be noted in the evaluation process. Then there were the two ecologically different species of eelgrass. These are Zostra. Most of you are familiar with it occurring in the estuarine environments, but there's also Zostra pacifica, which is another species that occurs out on the open coast as well. And then there's the two kelp species, Macrocystis pyrifera, the giant kelp, and then Pelagiophicus pora, the elk kelp. Again, these were not, Pelagiophicus in this case was not identified as a unique habitat, but one that based on its deeper depth, occurrence over soft bottom habitat, and unique canopy forming habitat relative to Macrocystis, was again identified as a key habitat that we're going to take special note of. And then there's the Farnsworth Bank, which is a unique pinnacle, and pinnacles, recall, are a key habitat. And it's unique in the sense that it supports rare and dense growths of a habitat-forming purple coral, hydrocoral, Stylaster californica. And that, so those are, the again, the basis for those key habitats of particular interest. And we'll return to these when we're thinking about the evaluation process and the habitat mapping process. And then finally, there's those two unique habitats that the SAT addressed at the previous meetings. And those were the oil seeps and the shallow hydrothermal vents. So now what I want to do is we could go ahead and I don't know, Steve, if we want to actually try and approve this document, the key and unique habitat document, at this point, or hold that off for the in-face meeting in a few days.
Well, I think our objective is to approve the document if we're happy with it. If people feel that they've had enough opportunity to review it, see it. If not, then of course we'll defer. Yep. But I think what we should do is continue along through your presentation, and we get to the point where you think that action would be appropriate. Let me know, and we'll call for public comment and go from there.
Okay. So why don't we do that now, if it's okay?
All right, so first let me at this point then notify the public that if you wish to speak on this document on key habitat representation, that you should go ahead and do what you have to do, which I think is hit what is asterisk one to get in the queue, and then we will, after we have some SAT discussion, we will then go to the public comment for their particular inputs. So first,
Steve, can I interrupt for just a second? There is a slight addition eventually to this Key and Unique Habitat, and that will be a more thorough description produced by John Largiere and perhaps with support of others on the oceanographic features that have been identified in the master plan as key habitat types, the upwelling centers and retention zones.
So we would be approving this with the idea that there will be some additions in those other in those areas you specified that we would then entertain and approve separately to be added into the document.
Exactly.
And of course, that's consistent with the way that we've been doing business because we are working on living documents here.
Correct.
Okay. So first, let me now take SAT comment on this key and unique habitat document. So if you would like to speak, indicate that, and we'll try to get people lined up. Who would like to make a comment or has a question? Floor is open.
Rich.
Rich Ambrose.
Yeah, I have a very minor comment. The part about the seagrasses isn't still quite right about the distribution of the two different species. So, I mean, it's a minor thing just about that, but I think that needs to be changed.
What would be your suggested?
Well, the way it is right now is it says that Zostra Marina is only in estuaries and sheltered bay, and Zostra Pacifica is along the open coast. And Zostra Marina also occurs on the islands. It's not only in estuaries and sheltered bays.
Okay.
Okay.
And there's a paper by Jim Coyer that really lays it all out. So do you want me to send that?
I think we hear your comment, and I think that the objective here would be to add some text in there that would make that read correctly. I think we'll look for you to do that, send it on, and that will be part of what we're doing here. Anybody have any other comments on this?
This is Pete.
Pete.
This is just a question, and that is, do key habitats need to be well mapped? And I say that in the context that something might be really important, but if you don't know where it is.
You know, we're going to get to that when we shift to the quality of the habitat map data.
Well, I understand that, but aren't you going to ask for our approval of this?
Well, so how does that bear on?
Well, as an example for pelagophycus,
right.
if we don't know where all the places that it occurs, is there any point of saying that it's a key habitat? Because presumably that implies that you want to protect it in some way, or at least include it.
Or point out when it's incorporated into an MPA proposal. So we actually, in fact, if you go to the bottom of this document, let me...
Is this A1? Is this a...
Document A1.
Yep.
No. No, it's actually in the... Yep, so if you can take a look here, and I am about to zoom in for your viewing pleasure, where there's some indication of the distribution. Can you guys see my mouse running around the north side of Santa Catalina and San Clemente?
Yeah.
And then a couple of spots that Paul has pointed out are rather ephemeral occurrences of pelagophycus. So, I mean, we do have some information on the distribution occurrence of pelagophycus that we could identify to the extent that it's been incorporated in MPAs.
Okay.
Other questions?
This is Dominic.
Dominic.
So I think it came up a little earlier in that brief presentation by Jason. There was a question about the... shallow hydrothermal vents and the lack, at least at that time, of mapping the one at White Point. And what triggered my thinking on it was just looking at the maps that Mark was showing. I couldn't tell, but it didn't look for very, very much that it didn't look like White Point had been mapped for that shallow vent there. So am I right about that? And it doesn't sound like it affects, you know, approval of the document, but it does relate to, eventually we do need to map that, so.
Mm-hmm.
So
So was I right about that?
That may be the case. Again, as we turn to the habitat representation evaluation document, we're going to, if you've looked at that yet, you'll notice there's a big table in that document that describes each of these key and unique habitats and the source of the information that we have for the distribution of those habitats. And then we're going to identify people that I'm going to bring your attention to give expert review of those distributions. So I wouldn't put as much weight in this particular figure, given that we're going to run all of these habitat layers through expert review prior to the evaluation process.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, that does. Yeah.
Additional questions?
We do have a question from one of the participants.
This is public?
Yes.
We'll call for those when we're ready for them.
Okay, thank you.
But thank you for alerting us to that. Mark, I have a question on the third page of the document. Can you put the document on the screen?
You bet. Page 3 here?
Yeah. So it's the right-hand panel. You should blow that up a little bit so we can...
Right here?
Right.
Huh?
So the question I have is, and this is a language question, but I think it's worth getting fixed. It's the first sentence, and that is that... the SAT is recommending that Farnsworth Bank in San Diego Bay be recognized. I'm not sure I understand what be recognized means in this.
No, that could be clarified as habitats of...
that require attention or...
Yeah, of particular interest and concern.
Okay. And then if you'll go to page 4...
Yes, sir?
On page 4, if you look at the unique habitats in the South Coast study regions, and I realize this is going to be taken up in a little more detail in a moment, but about 5 lines down in there, there's a sentence that starts right after hydrothermal vents. That says the SAT will not include these two unique habitats in habitat replication evaluations, but consideration should be given for their inclusion in MPAs.
That's correct.
So in terms of not including them in habitat replication evaluations, what we're saying is that they should be considered for representation?
Yeah, that's correct. So they'll be considered for representation, but because of their distribution and I don't know if I'd use the low abundance,
yeah, sure.
It'd be difficult to consider them for replication.
So maybe it should be given for their representation in MPAs.
Got it. Yeah, writing down these notes to edit this.
Okay. So Mark is making these small grammatical adjustments. We've got 3 things. We've got the one on this particular comment, which would be replacing inclusion with representation. We have one on the Farnsworth Bank in San Diego Bay be given attention. And then we have Rich's increase additions that would simply increase some accuracy with regard to the distribution of eelgrass. Does anybody have any other questions or comments on this document? Okay, I think we are ready now to go to the public comment then. And the public commenters will be restricted to speaking to this issue, habitat representation, and will be limited to 2 minutes. So we are ready for the first one. And I guess I'm supposed to be able to see how many are lined up here.
Well, actually, if we could ask the operator to let us know how many people are in the queue.
We have one right now. But once again, if you have any comments on this, star 1.
So where is the queue that we can see how many people are in the queue?
You can't. The operator hasn't.
Okay. Okay, so Operator, fire away with your one who's lined up.
Jenny Dugan, please go ahead.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I just wanted to make a quick mention on this habitat document, and I believe I had mentioned this maybe within a subgroup before, so I apologize for not getting it to your attention sooner. But for sandy beaches, pocket beaches and longer beach stretches can represent quite different habitat types. And I guess my concern is that pocket beaches would not be captured in the 1.14-mile designation, and also that they can be associated with rocky habitat as kind of a complex. The other issue would be that these mixed rocky and sandy intertidal habitats fall between the slots for rocky habitat or classic sandy beach habitat. So, and these can be quite biologically rich areas. And then just my last comment would be on soft bottom, that I think there could be scientific reasons to separate the soft bottom into a 0 to 30 meter and a 30 to 100 meter category habitats based on biological characteristics. Thanks.
Thank you, Jenny. Are there any other public comments lined up?
Steve, this is Pete. Can I respond a little bit to that?
Yeah, but let's make sure we're done with the public comments.
Okay.
Are there any more public comments?
Yes, we do have one more.
Let's hear the next one then first. And Pete, you'll be on.
Sure.
We have James Hudnall. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm a little bit behind the curve here, but I've been listening to the last few minutes of your discussion, and I'm wondering if you have given any thought to the La Jolla harbor seal rookery as being unique habitat, because the behavior of the harbor seals in that rookery is very different than in any other harbor seal rookery along the Pacific coast, in that the seals are habituated to human presence and provide high educational value, which is unequaled anywhere else in any other harbor seal rookery. If you haven't, let me go a little further. I've just outlined my concern here, but further, I'm concerned because I was attending the stakeholders meeting back on the 14th of this month, and I listened to Susan Chivers tell the group that she had removed the La Jolla harbor seal rookery from the marine mammal list of rookeries of interest for the larger group because of the ongoing lawsuit involved. And I'm wondering if that has removed all consideration of the La Jolla harbor seal rookery within your minds for its uniqueness.
Okay, thank you. Any more public comment?
Yes, we do have two more.
All right. So we have a problem here with understanding how many people we have lined up. And so we want to make sure we hear the public comment, but I think that we're going to have to ask the public members if they want to speak. When we give you the opportunity, I think you want to get your name in the queue. Otherwise, we have no idea how many are coming and how many are in line and so on. So let's please work to do that. Okay, let's hear the next public comment person. They have 2 minutes.
Chip Bissell, please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Can you hear me all right?
We can.
Okay, thank you. First, I would just offer a quick comment, a suggestion, if I may. I think some people are going perhaps in and out of this phone call or maybe coming in late. They might not hear the instructions for how to sign up for public comment, so it might help to repeat that periodically.
Good point.
That's all. Just briefly, with regard to the designation of Farnsworth Bank as pinnacle habitat and its unique nature, I was just wondering if the advisory team has considered the pinnacle that lies north of Santa Barbara Island, pretty much midway between Santa Barbara Island and Ventura. It's a little bit different habitat, but I wasn't sure if it had been surveyed and considered, and I would just like to offer that.
Is that in state waters?
That's a good question.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's have the next person, please.
We have Cole Greenberg. Please go ahead.
Thank you.
This is Joel Greenberg, South Coast Regional Stakeholder Group member, and good afternoon, all of you staff folks and everybody else. I don't have a specific item within the document that I feel fit to comment on, but a general comment is comes from my experience as an RSG member, in that it's probably better to defer your adoption of this document to the live meeting so that you all and we all have an opportunity to see what it looks like in final form. And it's also responsive to the previous lessons learned about having more interactive exchange between the RSG and the SAT. So other than that, I thank you for the thoroughness on this and for hearing me, and that was really my only comment.
Thank you. Any more public comment?
We did get one more from Bill.
Okay, put him on.
Bill, please go ahead. Bill, your line is open.
We have Bill there. Okay, it looks like we don't. If you can find Bill, let us know.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so I think we're back now to the SAT discussion. And, of course, anything's open here to discuss with regard to the document, with regard to the comments. Pete Raimondi, you were up.
I just wanted to respond to Jenny's comment, and probably are going to need some clarification from Emily or Jason, but as I understand it, within the habitat replication document, which she was alluding to, we lay out distances or area, and in that, the number that she gave, 1.14 miles for Sandy Beach or for Rocky, and then there's another number for Rocky Shores and so on, that does not mean contiguous, as I understand it. It could be a long stretch of intermittent rock and sand, and we would try to figure out what proportion of that stretch is rock versus sand and come up with an overall length as an example. So it could include pocket beaches if they were nestled within the rocky benches. Is that right, Jason? I mean, that's how I remember being from North Central. Is that right, Emily?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And again, there is a separation, at least in the habitat replication, for 0 to 30 and 30 to 100. So that will come up later on.
If I can quickly follow up, this is Mark Carr. It'll also show up in the habitat representation analysis as well.
Okay, any more SAT comment?
Hey, this is Susan Chivers here. Can I
yes.
comment on the
of course.
Public comment about the harbor seals?
You're up, Susan.
Yeah, I think I wasn't as clear as I could have been at the RSG meeting about handling the La Jolla harbor seal haulout. It is on the maps I presented. I grouped them all within the mainland haulout and rookeries. They will be considered in the evaluation for marine mammals. In terms of listing them as special habitat, I'm not sure about that because elephant seals in Central California are also very used to humans. And I don't know how that was handled. So I guess we should be consistent between regions. So I'd appreciate some guidance on that.
Okay. Other comments? Anybody else on the science panel who might like to speak?
You know, if I could quickly, this is Mark Carr again. And this is really in response to Joel's concern about the status of documents in the process of the SAT approving them. And I want to remind everybody that all of these documents are meant to be living documents and that will probably identify pieces that will have to be incorporated in the future as things are brought to our attention. But I think it's really critical that we get something accomplished for the regional stakeholder group to provide some initial guidance, and then we'll continue to refine that as quickly as we can through the revision of these documents. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Steve. I'd just like to also point out that, what we're hopefully trying to do is not throw something at the SAT for the very first time that we're asking approval on such as these documents. I know it may not seem that way sometimes, but clearly this document was discussed at the last meeting. I think there was a lot of discussion that centered on a few issues. The rewrite has attempted to address those issues, and I don't hear anybody too concerned or concerned that they haven't. So under those circumstances, I think that in order to get business done and to move the RSG along, which is our goal, I think that we want to do business at in this type of a format so that we don't get hung up on these things when we get into our live meeting, because we still have plenty to discuss. Are there any other SAT members that would like to comment on that point? Okay, I think we're ready then to have a motion to approve this document. The motion would be to approve the document with the three small edited adjustments that we discussed before. Can I have such a motion, please? Somebody like to make that?
This is Rich. I'll move that.
Okay, Rich has moved that.
I'll second.
And who's the seconder?
Pete.
Pete?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Any further discussion on this issue? Okay. Let me ask this. So let's try to do this by... Yeah, there are no polls associated with this webinar, so I guess we can't vote on the webinar. So then we're going to call for a voice vote. So if you would just please say yes if you support this, and then we'll go to the no's, and if we should be able to sort that out without having to go through a difficult count. Okay? So all those in favor, would you please say yes?
Yes.
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 Any no's? Please say no. Any abstentions? Please say you abstain. Okay, so we've approved this document. And before we go to the next place, so the next item on the agenda is briefing on habitat data sets with Evan or Emily. So you guys should be prepared and ready. But I'm going to quickly go through the role again. We had some, if you remember, in the beginning, we weren't sure whether we had everybody or not. And this will also tell us who voted, okay? So Larry Allen, would you say here?
Here.
Richard Ambrose? Rich? Thank you. Eric Bjorkstedt. Mark Carr.
Here.
Susan Chivers.
Here.
Christopher Costello. Paul Dayton.
Here.
Steve Gaines. Dominic Gregorio.
Here.
Ray Hilborn. John Lurgier. John, are you there?
Steve, this is Jason. I've seen an email back and forth from John.
Yeah, he's having trouble with the mute functions.
That's right. So, operator, if you can make sure John Largier is unmuted, that would be great.
When he gets unmuted, let us know. Steve Morgan. Dan Pondella.
Here.
We got Pete Raimondi.
Here.
Dan Robinette.
Here.
Astrid Schultz.
Here.
Steve Stowes. Steve Weisberg.
Here.
And Stephen Wirtz.
Here.
Okay, so the here's that all said here, they're counted up, they voted. Jason, one of you guys should have recorded that. And now we're going to turn this back to Mark, and I think you're going to turn it over to either Evan or Emily. So, Mark, you have it.
Thanks, Steve. And actually, I'm not going to turn it over to either of those two.
Good for you.
Yeah. And instead, what I'm going to do is actually try and incorporate that comment on the briefing on habitat data sets into this third part of this this section, which is to review and approve the habitat evaluation methods document.
So this is document A3, correct?
Exactly. So I'm going to turn your attention to this document A3 that I've just put on the screen. And you'll notice that there's some recent edits to this document. And so I'm showing you those, and you can refer to your hard copy that you received previously. So I want to quickly first run down through this document and then return to those remaining six slides that I have that, again, are just a summary of the key points that are presented in this document. So if I can first point your attention to this section 5.1, which is simply where the document that we just approved will be incorporated into this document on the methods used to evaluate the proposals based on habitat representation analyses. Okay? And then I want to turn to the next section here, which is the summary of the guidelines and evaluation methods. And what we've done here that is really minor alterations to the document that you just received earlier is to simply incorporate this piece right here that lays out more explicitly guidance from the master plan team. And this first piece emphasizes that every key marine habitat should be represented in the MPA network. Okay, then the second key piece of guidance is still what you received previously, which is simply the distribution of the habitat types across the environmental gradients of the study region. Then I want to bring your attention to this piece down here that was originally the second piece of the document that you have. We're going to extract that, and only because it actually refers, as you can see right here, to replication of MPAs. So that information is going to be extracted from this document and incorporated into the replication document. And then there's a small piece down in here that I'll read it to you quickly. It's so brief. It says, guidance in the MLPA closely mirrors these guidelines in the master plan with one key difference, and that's that the MLPA specifically indicates that marine reserves are an important component of habitat protection. So it emphasizes, again, the representation of these habitats in state marine reserves in addition to the other MPA designations. And then the other piece that we're suggesting for revision is this table right here. And the only reason, and the idea is to remove that from this document only because it's incorporated in that key and unique document that will be incorporated up above in this section of the document. Because now, having incorporated that, it seems particularly redundant. Okay, so then the document turns to the evaluation of habitat representation, and I have some slides to lead that discussion. And then there's this discussion about the consideration of habitat map quality. And I've incorporated in here, just not into the document, but just so I can give you guys some examples of where we may have mapping limitations, limitations on the quality of the mapped information for some of these habitats. So for example, one limitation was mapping is not of consistent quality across the entire study region. So an example of that would be where we have rather spotty information on the distribution of the surf grasses, especially along the mainland coast. And then the second piece is the map data does, another potential limitation is map data do not allow assessment of the extent of a habitat protected, either aerial or linear extent, which is usually the metric we use for the representation evaluation. And Pete sort of alluded to this. This is where currently what we have as an example is pelagophycus distribution mapped as points along the coast. And those points don't necessarily reflect accurately the abundance of this particular habitat-forming alga at each of those points, right? So there's going to be limitations, and I'm sure we'll run into that with the oil seeps and the hydrothermal vents as well. And then the other one, the final one, mapped data does not allow assessment of the extent of habitat protected. Oh, sorry, that's the one I just did. The third one is mapping does not accurately reflect the presence or absence of habitats. And I think that's pretty straightforward. That's where, for example, we may not have complete coverage of the distribution of a habitat type. I want to turn your attention now to this table one. And this is what I alluded to previously and how I want to address the issue of habitat map quality. And so we're in the process now for each of the key and unique habitats. Table 1 first lists all of these key habitat types. And you'll notice, for example, the Rocky Reef is broken into its depth distributions, and then likewise the same for the soft bottom habitats. It includes the submarine canyons, pinnacles, upwelling centers, and retention areas, and then it also includes our two unique habitats. And the point here is that we want to make sure that we can identify expert opinion or input to review the quality of these habitat maps. So this pertains, for example, to Dominic's concern about how accurate the hydrothermal vent mapping is at this point. So the very important thing here that we're going to touch on, and this is a piece of the slides that I'll show, is that we're going to request people to identify their ability to review these habitat layers so that we can, in fact, get expert review of these. And here's an example where the good Dr. Richard Ambrose has already reviewed the coastal marsh habitats, provided some comments, and the recommended application of that particular habitat layer. Okay, so now I'm going to come back to this slideshow. And again, these are just those first two pieces that were in the front end of that document that I just described, the comment about key habitats being represented in the network, across all the environmental gradients, and then the fact that the master plan indicates that, well, the Act and the master plan indicate that at least some of these MPAs should be state marine reserves. Quickly, an overview of the evaluation process for habitat representation. And I know you guys have seen this previously, but the idea is to consider the quality of these habitat maps. Then we consider the availability of each of these key and unique habitats, both within the across the entire study region and then within each of the five bioregions that we've identified. We calculate then the percent of each habitat protected within proposed MPAs at each level of protection of those MPAs. And we do that again across the entire study region and within each of the five bioregions. And then we, of course, note where habitat protection then is not distributed for a given habitat, where it is available in each of those five bioregions. So this representation analysis needs to be appropriate to the quality of the habitat maps. So depending on the quality of those habitats, that will determine how we approach the evaluation. So for example, where maps are poor, we might analyze for simply the presence or absence of those habitats across the MPAs in a proposed network. And then if we have point locations, we might identify, for example, the percent of those locations that are incorporated into an MPA network. And then, as I mentioned, what we really need next is assistance across the science advisory team and perhaps outside if people have identified particularly appropriate experts for each of these habitat layers to review those habitat layers. And what I want you to do, what I think the best, most expeditious way to approach this is to simply email Emily Sarman. Her email address, I don't know if you guys can see this. Now you can. Email Emily and simply indicate if you feel you have the expertise to help assess the quality of these maps and recommend somebody else who might. If you could please bring them to our attention. The faster we can run through that quality control of these habitat layers, the quicker we're prepared to make these analyses. And more importantly, they bear exactly how we're going to conduct the evaluation, whether it's the percent of a habitat that's incorporated in the MPAs, whether we simply note whether the network has identified a particular location or incorporated a particular location, like Farnsworth Bank, or the percent of areas, the number of locations of a given habitat that might be considered. And then finally, this last slide is a depiction, again, of how we represent the we convey the representation of these different habitat types across the proposals that we receive. And very quickly, this is for two different habitats, shallow rocky reef and deep rocky reef. This is an example from the North Central Coast study region prior to coming down to the South Coast. And it simply indicates the percent available habitat for each of the proposals that were received at one point in that process and their relative abundance at each of the different levels of protection based on the MPAs and the activities for each of those habitat types. Okay? And I think that's it for me.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. For members of the public, if you would like to make a comment on the habitat evaluation, you should hit star 1, and that would put you into the queue when we call for public comment. Okay. This is now open for discussion. Any discussion on the habitat representation evaluation methods that Mark has been discussing?
This is Rich.
Go ahead, Rich.
So I have a question about what Mark is asking for in terms of volunteers to review the mapping. When I did the review, it was the whole study region, which is hard. I think a lot of us will know some areas of the study region pretty well, but not necessarily everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, so for example, Rocky Shore, Surfgrass, things like that. I mean, I can tell you a lot about all the habitats in some sections of the study region, but I couldn't tell you about the whole region. So
yeah, that's a great point, Rich. If I can respond, I think the way to do that would be to ask people to do exactly that, identify both the habitats that you have some expertise or knowledge of and the region of the study region for which that pertains. Does that sound okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point, Rich.
Additional SAD members like to weigh in on this.
I had, this is Steve Wirtz, one procedure question for Melissa regarding the bioregions versus a biogeographical region. Would we need to do an amendment to the master plan to incorporate this methodology? And if so, can it be done after the analyses, or does it have to be drafted before they take this approach?
So you're referring to the application of the bioregions for the representation analysis. We've done that in the previous study regions as well, so it's already I don't think anything needs to be modified with respect to the master plan in that regard.
Mark, would you like to sort of quickly summarize what you've done with regard to that so everybody's brought up?
In the past, so if I can provide an example of from the North Central study region, we had identified three major bioregions in that study region, and they included essentially to the north and south of the Point Reyes mouth of the San Francisco Bay area. So everything from south of Point Reyes extending down to the southern end of that study region, and then everything along the mainland extending from Point Reyes to the northern boundary of that region, constituted two bioregions, and then the third was recognition of the unique environment of the Farallon Islands. And so we looked at the representation of the habitats available in each of those three subregions when we conducted our evaluations.
Okay. Any other SAT members like to speak? Okay, Mark, what is your pleasure at this point in time?
What I would like to do is have this document considered for approval by the SAT. Again, recognizing clearly it's a living document, we're going to have to fill in Table 1 so that at some point we have documentation of who actually provided review of these different habitat types.
Okay. Does anybody have a problem with that particular approach at this point in time? Don't be shy. Okay, then I think what I'd like to do is to call for public comment at this point in time, and then we'll come back and with the SAT and engage in more discussion, get a motion, and then decide what we're going to do here. So we're ready for the public comment on this. Remember, for the public, if you want to comment, it's star one. That puts you in a waiting list. The operator controls. Then when we call up, the operator will call on you to speak. You have 2 minutes, and your comments are to be specific to this particular issue, which is habitat representation evaluation. Okay, so is the operator there?
Yes, I am.
So we're ready for any public members who are lined up. Do we have any?
Yes, we have one.
Okay, and so public members, let me point out to you that if you want to speak on this issue, now is the time to hit star one so that we get a full queue and understand how many we have. Okay, I'm ready for the first speaker.
Thank you. We have Bob Osborne. Please go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can. Bob, you're on.
Okay. I'm Bob Osborne, United Anglers of Southern California. I'm having a tough time following these documents, the documents you have up online on the website, which you can actually page through. It doesn't have a lot of changes that have been made on the documents that you've got on the webinar, but you can't page through those. You're just kind of forced to look at whatever page is there. So it's a little difficult to figure out all that you're approving here.
Bob, do you have access to the webinar?
Yes, I have both. I have.
So you can.
I have a webinar, and I have a second computer with the documents from the website.
So are you able to see what's on the screen right now?
Yes.
So the red text is the only items here that we have really made changes to what you have been sent and seen and what's been posted.
Right, but I can only the red text is only on the webinar, and I can't flip through there. I saw it flipped through with a number times I wasn't able to follow what all the changes were.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, Bob?
No, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other people lined up to speak?
No, there's no further questions.
Okay. All right. Back to the SAT group. Any more thoughts or comments on this? Are any of the SAT members having difficulty following what we're doing here? If you are, speak up. I know Paul, you're having a little trouble probably because you can't see everything. Anybody else? So I assume we're comfortable with this.
Actually, Steve, this is Astrid. I had one question.
Yes, please.
Evan and Jason and I have started a side conversation yesterday and earlier today. Pertaining to some new data that are coming into the process, and I think Evan gave a presentation to the RSG that, for example, referenced our data, referenced the Cavitec data, which show up in this document we're looking at, and a bunch of other data sets. And so it reminded me that we had adopted a process to review data sets that come into our universe. And I'm wondering if how we roll that protocol, if you will, into what we're proposing to do here as it pertains to the habitat maps. And if I recall that protocol correctly, which I may not off the cuff, I believe that we are to expect sort of a description of the data set from staff that details, you know, the origin. So let's pick on Quitec, for example. You know, here he is on the on that screen, on that table that's contained in this document we're currently looking at. And so presumably anybody who is reviewing this should get from staff a description and resolution and origins, methods, et cetera, associated with that data set. Am I correct in my recollection? Is that what we're still doing here?
That's my understanding, Astrid. That's right on the money.
So staff, is staff providing that for us here?
This is Jason. We can do a first filter of this. What we had talked about, I think it was during our first SAT meeting, we had provided a draft protocol of how we might describe a data set. And as Astrid pointed out, it would contain things like, you know, the spatial resolution, whether it's actually mapped data or unmapped data, and what part of the process it might inform. It could just be useful only to the RSG and not hugely useful to SAT evaluations and whatnot. And so I think staff can certainly run things through that filter and work with the work group on that to double check that and then bring that to you. And the work group, if I recall right now, is Astrid and Stephen Morgan. I'd have to go back to my notes to remember anybody else. But
yeah, there were other people on it. But
I think there were two,
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful so that even people who don't review particular data sets still get the synopsis of what's in the data set, and so that we have a record. Because one thing that's beginning to happen is I'm getting questions from people associated with the process saying, oh, is the SAT aware of this data set? What's your judgment of it, et cetera? So it'd be good to actually step through that formal process.
Okay, more on this? Anybody like to talk?
Steve Wirtz, I was just going to follow up on Astrid's comments regarding maybe you should also in the metadata or on a table like this state whether the data was used in the regional profile. That might help people who are looking at that document understand whether where the data was coming from or if they've actually seen it already.
Okay, so we have some cleaning up to do to make sure everybody's aware of that, and I think that our intent, and Mark, you pointed it out, that's what we're doing. That's what we think we're doing, right?
I don't. Mm-hmm. I should also mention that many of the data sets that are currently being considered for these habitat maps are also described in the regional profile.
Okay. All right. Any more discussions on this document? Are people comfortable with moving forward here? If you're not, speak up. And if I hear nothing here, then I think what we need is a motion to approve this document as amended. And Mark, if you would show the page that has the amendments on it.
Hey, while he's doing that, Steve, I have no idea what Mark's been showing, so I'll support this with the understanding I'll be able to get at it later, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I think Mark can read what the changes are. I think they're pretty simple and short. And if you'll scroll to the first page of the document where your changes are, and Mark, let's first get a motion, and then we'll ask Mark to read these changes so everybody understands them. So the motion would be to adopt the document with these changes.
So moved.
And who's this?
Larry.
Larry Allen, have a second, please.
Yeah, this is Dominic. I'll second it.
Dominic seconds it. Okay, so we have a motion on the floor to approve this document. And Mark, would you please now read in for Paul and others exactly what the edits are?
I will. So the first edit is in section 5.2, and currently the subheading for that is the master plan guidelines with respect to habitat protection are as follows, and the idea is to insert in the first point text directly from the master plan framework that says for an objective of protecting the diversity of species that live in different habitats and those that move among different habitats over their lifetime, every key marine habitat should be represented in the MPA network. The second edit is the removal of the point that reads, for an objective of providing analytical power. And the reason that section is being removed is because it refers to replication, and that section will be moved to that replication document. Then there's another piece that's to be inserted that reads, guidance in the MLPA closely mirrors these guidelines in the master plan, with the one key difference that the MLPA specifically indicates that marine reserves, parentheses SMRs, end parentheses, are an important component of habitat protection. So it's the emphasis from the master plan framework on a network of state marine reserves. Then the last edit, separate from table, the fleshing out of table one, is to remove that table that of habitat types that, and the section that says considering guidance from the MLPA and master plan. And the only reason that section's being removed is because it's redundant with the piece on the key and unique habitats that will be inserted in 5.1 above.
Thank you, Mark. So, folks, the idea here is that we are approving pieces of a document that will get stitched together. And so far, we've already approved the key and unique habitat guidelines. Now, this is the evaluation part of that document. We already know that for the key and unique habitats, we're going to be separately and at a later date here analyzing some text that will deal with the oceanographic features that will be added into it. So we're basically building a document here. We built one piece. Now we're building the evaluation or the second piece. Is everybody clear on that, I hope? Okay, so any discussion on approving this document? Paul, I hope that's good enough. It may not be entirely, but if you have the hard copies in front of you of the previous version, then I think you can see what's being addressed here.
Okay, thanks. That was persuasive, Mark.
Okay, anybody have any more discussion on this?
This is Rich.
Rich.
Very minor edit in the now bullet two. It says key marine habitats defined below, but you've just taken out the below part. So I guess you need to say
defined above.
Done above, exactly.
Okay, very nice.
Thanks, Rich.
Any other comments, suggestions, questions, anything here?
Yeah, this is Astrid. I would just suggest inserting a reference to our data review protocol, maybe somewhere near that table.
Mark, you want to scroll that to the table? We can maybe find a place.
Mm-hmm. I would think it would be somewhere. It might be. How about in here? Let me just quickly. Yep. And so I'll reference to external data.
Protocol.
And I suppose, Jason, we should check if we actually finalized that protocol.
Astrid, we did not. It was still in draft form, and we sort of pushed on through things, so we'll have to bring that back to the SAT to review the protocol and the forms for that.
So let me suggest that we don't do that now, but
right. That
when you've gone through and vetted it, that we would come back to this document and add it in. Is that fair?
That sounds good to me.
But I think this is our intent. And, Mark, I was just going to say that green text up there.
Going away.
That is not part, right?
No, those were notes for me to provide examples for you guys for those.
Okay.
Presentations.
All right. Okay, so are we okay with this? Any other questions or comments? So the idea is that we are not going to put a reference to external data protocols in now, but it's the intent of the group to have that happen once that external data protocol process has been finalized by us, and then we'll come back to this document and add something into it because this is our intent. Astrid, that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right. So let's move this for approval then. If you vote to approve this, please say yes. You can do that now.
Yes.
Hey, if there are any no's, would you say no? And if you hear a no, I will. We need to identify the no's. No's? Any abstentions? Okay, so we have no abstention and no negatives. So this document's been approved for the next stage in this process. All right. So we've finished number A up here of this particular section. We are now going to move over to B. We're about 45 minutes behind schedule, if I'm reading my clock correctly here, which is not a huge surprise. So I think that, but I think what we should do is we should go ahead and take a break here. We've got a 3 o'clock break, and let's take this break. This is somewhere in the middle of our call. But you need to be back here on the phone, ready to go at 3:10. And I guess at 3:10, we will have the public comment. So public members, if you want to hit your asterisk 1 to get in that queue, you should do so. And these comments can be about other things besides the specifics of the documents we're approving. And then when we come back, we'll move to the habitat replication. And, Pete, you'll be up, okay? Everybody's on break. Okay.
Good.
And
okay, Mark, Steve, still... I have to leave. It's Paul Dayton.
Okay.
So don't count me as missing or something when I'm not answering.
Okay. Thanks.
Sorry, guys.
10-minute break, folks.
Hi, Jason, are you still there?
Yeah, Mark, I'm here.
Hey, do you have control back now from my machine?
No, not yet. If you scroll down the list on the right-hand side that says, somewhere there'll be a tab that says staff under the other little window there for the webinar thing.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at staff. Uh-huh.
Okay, just below your name, there's two Melissa Miller Hensons. The second one should say organizer. If you right-click on that, and then say make presenter, it'll come back over to me.
Coming at you.
There we go. Got it.
Thanks, buddy.
Either we cut it or... Hey, Jason?
Yeah, Emily?
So the only thing is that that we left that saying that the biogeographic region was Point Conception to Oregon, so we either need to say Point Conception to Mexico or put both of the biogeographic regions in. That's all.
Okay. We'll just make it a point to correct that.
Okay, I think we're about ready to come back to life here.
Great.
So let's see who we have. Larry Allen?
Larry's here.
Rich Ambrose? Eric Bjorkstead? Mark Carr?
Here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Susan Chivers?
Here.
Chris Costello? Paul Dayton? Steve Gaines? Dominic Gregorio.
Here.
Ray Hilborn. John Legere. John, are you unmuted? Steve Morgan. Dan Pondella.
Here.
Pete Ramondi.
Here.
Dan Robinette.
Here.
Astrid Schultz. Steve Stowes. Steve Weisberg. Steve Wirtz.
Here.
Rich Ambrose, are you back on, Rich?
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay. Let's see, Chris Costello, Paul Dayton, Steve Yanes, Ray Hilborn, John Legere. John, you on? We just got John's, John's been having problems with his muting, but I think he says he's all hooked up fine. Okay. Steve Morgan, Dan Pondella, you're still there, right? Astrid, are you here there, Astrid? Astrid? Steve Weisberg.
Excuse me, can you hear me? It's John Legere.
This is John. John, thank you, John.
Okay, Vinci. I was a non-panelist, I think, in the first half. That is what happened.
Okay, a non-panelist. Ah, that's easy.
Steve, can you hear me? This is Dan.
Dan Pondella?
Yeah,
got you, Dan.
Thanks.
I'm still looking for Astrid and Steve Weisberg. All right, I think we're going to go ahead and move on. And what we've asked for now is public comment. Operator, are you ready for the public?
Yes.
Our operator present. How many are lined up?
We don't have any currently in queue.
Nobody in queue, so no public comment. Nobody signed up for public comment at the moment then, right?
Correct.
Okay, so I think we're ready to, and what time do you have, operator?
15 after.
All right, so we said 3:10, so I think that that's a five-minute buffer. We'll move forward then. So I think we're now on habitat replication, and our objective here is to hear from Pete, who's going to discuss some of the issues that we had confronted at our last face-to-face meeting, and have an update on species-area relationships. And then we are going to look at document B2, which we will look at, and if folks are comfortable, we will look at approving that document. So I'm going to turn this over to Pete now. And Astrid, are you there yet?
I am.
And how about Steve Weisberg? So we'll call for Steve again in a moment. And we want to remind the public, if you would wish to comment on this particular habitat replication issue, then you already hit star one and you will be in a queue. We will call for public comment for you to add your input on that. So, Pete, the floor is yours.
Great. Just as a little bit of background, what we're doing here is we are trying to come up with an estimate of the area or linear distance for certain habitats that would be required to lead to a likely 90%. That's what the SAT has advised, a likely 90% of available species being represented. And so this first slide just is an indication of what we're trying to do. And we use existing data sets for this, and the data sets come from a variety of sources that I will show in the next slide. Next slide. Okay, so this is, I'm going to cut right to the chase because that's what the document is intended to do. These are the values that we have come up with for these particular habitats. Some of these we've seen before and other ones are new. We've derived them since the last meeting, and I'm just going to walk through them very quickly. For rocky intertidal, the estimate is that you would need about half a linear mile, and we're using linear miles for certain features like rocky intertidal and others that I'll talk about. 0.48 linear miles, this is based upon Pisco biodiversity surveys. For shallow rocky reefs and kelp forests, again, we are using linear miles, and this is going to be to the end of the rocky reef feature within 0 to 30 meters of depth. Typically, this means a kelp forest. And there, the estimate is 1.14 linear miles. This is based upon the Crane subtitle surveys. Deep rocky reefs from 30 to 100 meters of depth, These are based upon Milton Love surveys, and we've come up with an area of 0.2 square miles in this case. The next one is deep rocky reefs that are deeper than 100. And in some of the other documents, there is another category, which is 100 to 200 meters. There weren't enough data available to make a separate assessment of 100 to 200 and 200 to 3,000. And so these two strata were lumped together, and the value there is 0.22 square miles. That's also based upon the Love surveys. The sandy beaches, we're going to need to talk about, but what we're recommending is 1.14 linear miles, and you can see that's the same as shallow rocky reefs. Sandy habitat, 0 to 30 meters, we're also recommending 1.14 linear miles, and that's also we'll need to talk about. Sandy habitat, we use SQIRP surveys, BITE 98 and 03, and for the area between 30 and 100 meters of depth, the recommendation is 2.24 square miles. For that area between 100 and 200 meters depth, we're recommending 1.1 square miles. And for deeper than 200 meters, we're recommending 0.46 square miles. And then there's a new category here, all sandy habitat greater than 0 meters depth. We're recommending 8 square miles, and this is what we're considering the preferred option. And you can see below a discussion of this. So these are the key things to discuss here are sandy beaches, sandy habitat, and all sandy habitat, because this is due since last time. Estuarine habitats are the same. This is 77 acres or 0.12 square miles, and there's a little bit more documentation there. What we also want is there to be a mixture of the estuarine habitats, and that would be mudflats or intertidal areas, vegetated marsh, and subtidal areas, and those are described in the document itself. Next slide. Okay, explanations. This is for, and these all come in the document, so you can follow this along in the document. For the 0 to 30 meter habitat, the species that are unique to this habitat also and mainly inhabit the surf zone. Therefore, we're using the linear extent of the shallow soft bottom to assess the presence of this habitat. The distribution and movement patterns of this species in the surf zone we think is likely to be similar to that of species in shallow rocky reefs, and therefore, the percentage of biodiversity was assessed using the area biodiversity relationship from the 0 to 30-meter rocky reefs. So that's where the 1.14 came from. Also, and very importantly, to be considered present, this habitat must also extend to the 30-meter contour. And what that essentially means is that if you've got 1.14 linear miles, that would be from shoreline out to 30 meters of depth, regardless of the area that it encompassed. Next slide. Sandy beaches. We were unable to get any data to make a scientific assessment of the relationship between beach length and biodiversity. And so this is our reasoning about the area or the linear distance. Because sandy beaches are usually inshore from shallow soft bottom areas, meaning the 0 to 30, and to make area delineation logistically feasible, the required linear extent of sandy beaches to soft bottom habitats, 0 to 30 meters. Hence, the SAT considered sandy beach habitat present for the purposes of replication if there was at least 1.14 miles of sandy beach in a given MPA. And remember, as I indicated before, this does not mean contiguous. It just means that there needs to be 1.14 linear miles somewhere in the MPA. Next slide. In my mind, this is the most important new feature and something that there may need to be some discussion of. This is all sandy habitat. We listed a preferred value of about 8 square miles that included all sandy habitat greater than 0 meters depth. So that incorporates across all depths. Here, the value came from an examination of two sets of NIMS trawl data that yield a value of about 8 square miles using the species accumulation methodology that we talked about before. Those NIP samples come from areas just outside the region, and the samples themselves, the trawls themselves, are much larger than the SQIRP trawling samples, about 10 times as large. Also, the NIMS trawls were used for the north central evaluation, which yielded a value of 9 square miles of sandy habitat for that region. Hence, to integrate both the SQIRP data and the results of the analysis using the NIMS data, we're presenting a minimum and preferred size for sandy habitats. The preferred size for sandy habitats is then 8 square miles, including a shore length of at least 1.14 linear miles for the linear for the 0 to 30 meter depth. And remember, that has to go out to 30 meters depth. and 2.24, 1.1, and 0.46 square miles of the habitat in the 30 to 100, 100 to 200, and greater than 200 meter zones, respectively. Okay, now I'd like to go back, Jason, three slides to that table. There. So I think this is a good. There's only two more slides, three more slides, and they're just follow-up slides and don't really relate to the document. And I think it would be a good idea to have a discussion about this table and about those features that I just brought up, the sandy features, so that we can move on.
Okay, so we'd like to entertain questions, comments, discussion on this table, correct?
Yes.
Larry Allen. Pete, I assume these are statute miles.
Emily, they're statute miles.
Yeah, because
yes,
there's a controversy about that with the.
These were all actually calculated first in kilometers, and
okay.
Because that's what all of our data are in, and then we, for the purposes of this, we converted it to statute.
Yeah, because there's some confusion about nautical miles and statute miles.
Yep.
My other question is, Pete, now these data sets, the SQIRB data sets you've listed here for Sandy Bottom, we're talking about Sandy Bottom.
Yeah.
These are the trawls that have full fish and invert assessments?
Yep.
Okay.
And they included both.
Okay, because we had sent you some data, but it was just on fishes for the shallower stuff. But I assume that it wasn't used because it didn't have invert.
No, Larry, it actually was used. I didn't point it out here.
Okay.
But what we did there is we calculated it for the shallow area. It was just on fish, right?
Right.
And what we did is we then, again, because we wanted to, in order to be consistent with the North Central, but also because we thought it was the right way to approach that shallow habitat, we wanted to calculate both linear extent and an area. And so what we were able to do is to come up with the resampling methodology using your data that you sent to us.
Okay.
And then what we did is we said, okay, well, what is the average distance from 0 to 30 meters across the region? And so that we could apply, because we absolutely thought for that habitat in particular, to capture all the species, you needed to have it go out to the 30-meter isobath. Rather than say, well, we'll collect all the area in the 0 to 10, which is possible if we just use area.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did is we collected all the – we did cross-sectional distances from the 0 to 30 and then calculated the average linear – the median linear distance that you would need to capture that.
Okay.
And it turned out to be almost the same as 1.14. So for logistic reasons, more than anything, we set it at 1.14.
Okay. Well, yeah, because it looks reasonable to me, but I don't know, but I was wondering if that data
was
incorporated.
You.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Cool.
Any other SAT members like to weigh in on this?
Yeah, this is Dominic.
Dominic.
This is a very minor point, I think, but it's nomenclature. So in the table, it refers to sandy habitat, but, as you go further offshore, of course, it gets finer and finer. It's not sand predominantly as you go offshore, and maybe just something we could, and I saw that you referred to it as soft bottom.
Yeah, I use them interchangeably. I don't mind changing everything to soft bottom. That's fine.
Okay, so I just wanted to bring that up.
Hey, just to make sure, Emily or Jason, what are the categories? Are they called soft bottom habitats? Because we should stay consistent with what the other language is.
I think they are soft bottom, aren't they?
I don't remember. I just don't know.
So this is Evan Fox. In the past, we've used those terms interchangeably, so we could use either, I think, whatever this group thinks is most appropriate.
So if you look at our habitat representation document, it's sandy beach, and then it's soft bottom.
It's more accurate.
Right.
Okay, that's fine.
So we should be consistent with that. So it should read sandy beaches, and then soft bottom habitat 0 to 30, soft bottom 30 to 100, and so on.
Yep.
Now, that would mean all sandy and soft bottom habitat.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Everybody good on that? Any other folks like to weigh in on this? Pete, your wish would be that we would go ahead and approve this the document or this table or what?
Yeah, with that one modification that we'll change the language from sandy to soft bottom where appropriate.
Okay.
Hey, this is Mark Carr. I thought right now we were just focused on the table, but your wanting comments on the whole document at this point?
Yeah, I think because the approval is of the document.
So,
isn't it?
So we look. Yeah, so it looks like we focused the discussion on the calculations in the table, and I think we're through with that from the SAT standpoint at the moment. So now what we should do is put the full document up, and we should focus in on this and see if we have comments to be made on this whole document. Obviously, we've identified something there. Now, who is running this one now?
This is Jason. I've got that, and I've identified Oregon as needing to be corrected to be the Mexico border.
The U.S.-Mexico border?
Yeah, for the biogeographic region.
Right.
So we'll change that.
Okay. Anybody? Now, you're looking at, this is document B2, correct? B2. And so we want to call your attention to document B2. Now, the real meat of document B2 would be the result of the calculations that appear in Table 1, which Pete has been discussing and which we have been looking at and concentrating our efforts on.
Right.
So we're now opening up the rest of the document for folks to weigh in on. If you have things you see here that you don't like, this is a time to bring them up. So SAT points, comments on this, what do we have?
And just to give you some insight, the bulk of the document is just a description of the methodology that was used to create this. And you can see here are some curves and that are generated, and there's also a description of the methodology up front that yields the table. And then following the table in this document, for those of you that may not have it in front of you or can't see it, there is just a description of those particular habitats that needed more explanation.
So this is Rich.
Yeah.
Rich. Go ahead, Rich.
I thought I understood, but now I'm a little confused about the soft bottom and sandy beach.
Yeah.
Is the sandy beach included in the 8 square miles?
In my mind, it is, in the sense that there's a linkage in the recommendation between 0 to 30 and Sandy Beach. And both in terms of logistics and in terms of sort of ecological functioning, the goal, I think, would be to have that area be as contiguous as possible, ranging from the Sandy Beach out to the deepest soft bottom habitats. But in this document, if you go down just a little bit lower, Jason,
to the all sandy habitat.
Yeah, just
I know that's what's confused me.
Right there.
The wording there.
At the very bottom, the preferred size is 1.14 linear miles for the 0 to 30 meter depth, and then so on. And so that actually goes from 0 to 3,000, I guess.
Right, and even the heading says all sandy habitat greater than 0 meters.
Yep.
Which seems to exclude the sandy beach.
Well, I that was on purpose, and the reason for that is, and it relates back, although this is what I expect will happen, it links back to some of the comments that were made before with respect to sand-rock interface. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you guys know, down there especially, there's oftentimes these little pocket beaches and so on that show up. And that is actually, those are sandy beaches that often are not associated with the offshore sandy soft bottom habitat, because they're pocket beaches and otherwise kind of rocky areas. And so those would count for sandy beach habitats and have counted before.
Yeah, so I think I think earlier I heard Steve, when we were talking about changing the word to soft bottom habitat, it would be changed to sandy and soft bottom habitat, but it seems to me like we shouldn't do that.
It should be soft bottom?
It should just be soft bottom.
Yep.
And then that's clear. And then the only place where there's the linkage is in the sandy beach.
Right.
How you discuss the linkage.
Yep.
And so that means that, you know, if it's appropriate at the sandy beach level, it's linked to the soft bottom.
Yeah.
But it's not required.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, just for clarification, and just as another point that we don't have aerial measures for sandy beach habitat. They're linear measures.
Right.
And so or where you're going with this is that the 8 square miles is only the subtitle soft bottom habitat?
Yes.
Okay. I just
absolutely.
From that.
Yep.
Okay, great. And that makes sense according to that paragraph then.
Okay. Now, let me ask a question here. This is Steve. So when you look at the, you indicated that in the North Central, you came up with about 9 square miles.
Are you talking to me, Steve?
Yeah, Pete.
Okay, sorry. Uh-huh.
So about 9 square miles, and I assume that the way you handled sandy beaches in the North Central is similar to what we're looking at doing here, right?
It is.
Okay.
But we included that area in the calculations. So we used the linear distance, mm-hmm. but we included the area for that shallow sandy area, 0 to 30, mm-hmm. in the calculations of total area needed for soft bottom.
Got you. 0 to 30, total area needed
yep.
for soft bottom. Okay, so that should be all soft bottom habitat greater than 0 meters.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, anybody else want to weigh in on this?
Can we go to the top of the document and run down through it?
Top of the document? I think we're waiting for Jason here.
You guys, we should be at the top there. Do you guys see that?
Yeah,
oh, there you are.
Okay.
So there's the one, I'm just going to run through a bunch of minor edits that really don't have any major implications for the content of this thing. But, for example, the first one started with defining correctly the subtitle study, Southern Cal study region, right, from Point Conception to the U.S.-Mexico border. And then if you go down to the third paragraph, Jason, the last two lines there refer to appropriate habitat for a particular species. Can you see that?
Talking about an MPA that does not contain appropriate habitat for a particular species provides no benefit to that species?
Yep. So I would add to that appropriate habitat for an ecosystem or particular species provides no benefit to that ecosystem or species.
I'd add these right now, Mark, but I'm looking at a PDF here. So
okay. No, no worries. No, I'm just, as long as people can, you can see where these suggested edits would go in.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah.
This is a suggested edit, right?
Yes.
And so if we're going to get picky like this, I actually think that statement is not correct. It clearly provides some benefit, but it's probably insufficient benefit, isn't it?
Where does it, well, yeah, it doesn't say sufficient benefit.
It says provides no benefit.
It does not contain appropriate, provides, you want to change that to insufficient benefit?
Well, I think so, because I think
sure.
what we're saying is that it needs to have a certain amount,
right? On.
Right?
Yeah, right on, right on. Can
yep.
you see that, Jason? Change the word no to insufficient in that same highlighted area.
Got it.
Good call, Pete. And then if we can move to the next part, that paragraph that refers to the only MPA clusters above the minimum size, 9 square miles, that's where we might put a footnote behind the word miles and identify that miles refers to statute miles throughout the document.
Good point.
And then if you go down to just above figure one, and I've made these edits in my Word document of this that I can send you, Jason.
That'd be great. Thanks.
So you've highlighted there are 6 habitat types. And I think Table 1, if we're interpreting it this way, includes 10 habitat types.
Oh, good point. Yep.
Got it.
And then when you drop down to Table 1, I think the only change is, so one thing we might do in the title of that table is again mention that miles refer to statute miles.
Yep.
And then the only other change you guys specified is changing sandy to soft bottom habitat. And then if you drop down to that all sandy habitat paragraph, greater than 0 meters depth.
Yeah, we'll put that soft bottom.
Yeah, that and also actually if you look at, and I want to power through this because these are minor. Go on down to, sorry, not in the table, down in the text. At the bottom of page 4. Right there. It reads, it is important to note. Where do you see that? Can you highlight that? Yeah, it's over to the right hand, right on, you got it. It is important to note that using instead of the word the.
Gotcha.
Guess who's editing chapters of theses right now? And I think that's it.
Okay, those are all, I think, really cosmetic and minor, but appropriate changes to make. And we've already agreed on the soft bottom issue. Anybody else like to comment on this? All right, let's hear from the public then now on this particular document, habitat replication, comments on document B2. Do we have anybody lined up in the queue from the public? We have our operator here.
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. There's nobody in queue.
Nobody in queue. No comments from the public on this document.
We just received one right now.
Okay. Put them on.
Actually, there's two. I apologize. We have George Lang. Please go ahead.
George, you're on. I don't know that we're hearing anybody. Do you have George hooked up?
His line is open. He may have it muted on his end.
George, if you can hear us, you need to unmute your line. Operator, would you tell him how to do that, please?
It would be on his phone. He's not muted through our system, so if he had a mute button on his phone, he would just need to call that. I'll release him back in, and then I'll open up.
If he comes back up, that'll be great. Open the next person up. Who's up?
James Hundle, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I just want to say there were members of the public who wanted to make comments not directed to specific agenda items, and for some reason the operator or the system did not pick up our star one.
So you were here and ready at the time, but you just didn't get picked up, huh?
Absolutely, and I know of at least one other person who was also.
Okay, we'll give you another chance here shortly once we get through with this habitat replication.
Thank you. I'll stand
document,
by.
Okay?
Thank you. I'll stand by.
All right. Any public comment on this habitat replication document? Anybody else lined up, operator?
Yes. Jenny Dugan, please go ahead.
Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi there. Hey, so this is looking pretty good, and I just wanted to mention, and this may not be the right place for it, but something to consider is the idea that not all of these beaches are going to persist if, you know, under sea level rise, sandy beaches that are up against the bluff, for instance, that we count towards our total mileage here, are not going to be ones that necessarily are going to persist as long as, say, beach habitat that has room to retreat.
Point.
I'll just put that into the, perhaps not necessarily in this document, but just something for consideration relative to habitat replication.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Anybody lined up? Operator?
We could try George's line again.
Try George one more time.
George, your line is open. Please go ahead.
George, are you there?
George Lang?
It looks like we don't have George opened up, so I think we need to move forward here as a science panel. So I think what we're looking at now is a motion to approve this document, B2, on habitat replication. And we need a motion to that effect. Would somebody like to please make that motion?
This is Mark Carr. I'll motion that.
Mark Carr is a mover. Do we have somebody who would second? Who's this?
This is Rich.
Rich will second. Any further discussion on document B2? All right. If you approve this document, would you please say yes?
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
And if you oppose, would you please say no? Abstentions, please say abstain. So we have all in favor, no noes, no abstentions. So at this time, if you're a member of the public and you wish to...
Wait, Steve.
Yes, sir.
Steve, there are two more slides. Remember I said that?
Yeah.
Can I go to those last three slides, Jason?
Of course. Thank you, Pete.
You bet. Okay, there were two other topics that were brought up at the last SAT meeting, and I'm categorizing them as these two. One is it's essentially a SLOS argument, which is given a size, let's say, you know, 2 square miles or whatever it would take, could it be a single large versus several small? So this was brought up by a couple of people in the SAT. And then there was another thing that was brought up by Chris Costello, and that is, an estimation using a different approach, which is estimation of size needed to produce a 90% chance that a species occurred. So this is what I'm calling the species-based approach. This differs from the current approach, which is the size needed to include, and this is in a probabilistic sense, 90% of the species. They're different. And I just want to show you the output. I don't think it really has any impact here, though the first one might. Next slide. Okay, so... This is some work that we've done. This is just using the Pisco intertidal data as an example. And so if the 90% of habit, if you wanted to capture 90% of the species, of the available species, you would need a habitat of a certain size. And we said it was 0.48 linear miles. That's the recommendation. And so along the x-axis is the percent of the desired habitat. In this case, it's linear miles of rocky intertidal. And the red line depicts the number of species that are, you know, 90% of the total. So it's about 190 species. And then the blue line represents how many species would be in a linear distance of a certain size. So if you look at it, the first point down there in the far left is about 5% of the desired habitat. So it's about 0.024 linear miles. And if you look at that, then there'd be about... 60 species. But if you assembled a whole bunch of those, it would add up to the right number. So if you assembled a whole bunch of those, you could have them add up to the desired number. The same thing if you had 50% in any MPA, you could add them up to the desired number. And so the question was, should we consider split replicates, which is like, some small ones that add up to the same size as a large one, or several small versus single large. And I guess the point that I wanted to address and actually bring up to the SAT was, do we want to consider split replication? My advice would be no. And it's based upon the idea that I think that any replicate for conservation reasons, and again, this is mainly for conservation reasons, there wasn't one aspect of fisheries management that came into the consideration of size. I think we want replication that is largely intact rather than split. So, and this just indicates, the fraction of the species that you would get if you split it, even though by summing up all the pieces, you would end up with the desired number of species. And in essence, what it would do is it would cut down on the interactions among species within any given replicate. That's the bottom line. So that's the first question. Next slide. The second question, and this was quite revealing to me. And so what this is a species-based approach. And in this case, I used the Crane Rocky Reef data as an example. And so it's a frequency distribution of the distance required to produce 90% likelihood of a species being present. And what this points out to me is that at least with the crane data, there's really three categories of species. There are, and this is probably not lost on anyone, there are many species that are common, and you don't need very big areas to capture those species. There are some species in red that are really rare, and it would take an immense, this is linear distance in miles, it would take immense size replicates to have a 90% chance of capturing them within that replicate. And there's a bunch of species in the middle. And I think this does is inform us about the types of species that are present rather than inform us about what decisions we should make about habitat size and replicate size. But again, it was brought up as something that was desired to be seen. And so this is an example of the information, and we could produce more of these if there was an ongoing need for this type of information. So that's it. That's all that we've done. I think that the major thing in front of us is to go back one slide and really just simply either start asking or finish asking the question about whether we would consider split replication. I'm done.
Rich?
I think you baffled us here.
Okay.
This is Rich.
Uh-huh.
Rich.
I have a question and then a comment. So these are the little error bars there are the fraction or the number of species in the different lengths of that habitat.
Well, what it basically is let's just take the first one. Let's pretend that the first one is a 5% of the desired area. Okay, the very far one to the left, Rich.
Right.
And so what it says is we could have one big one or we could have 20 small ones.
Yeah.
And they would add up to the same area. And, in fact, when you run the resampling, what happens is they add up to the same average number of species. And this would be the number that would be found on average in any one of them, about 60 species, right? But there's a lot of error.
Yeah, my question actually has to do with overlap of species if you were to combine those.
No, it includes the overlap. So these are unique species. Okay.
So it does, but I mean it. So if you had two replicates that were half of the desired area.
Yeah.
That right here, let's see. I mean, right now, if I look at this, I'm looking at 50% of the desired area. It looks like, you know, the bar is about 170 species or something like that.
Yep.
Right. So you don't get 340 species by...
No, because there's too much there's overlap, right?
Yeah, because there's...
So these are unique species.
Got it. Okay, that was my question.
This is a species accumulation curve, is what it is?
It is. There are species accumulation curves. And with error, and then the red line is intended to indicate that no matter what, you're never going to end up with more than on average 190, even if you sample 20, you know, 0.05s or 2.5s.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. Good. That's just what I wanted to know.
Okay. SAT members, comment on this. Any further discussion on this topic for Pete?
Well, I guess what I really want is, you know, just whether we're going to consider split replication or not. Because that changes how we evaluate replication a lot.
So the key issue here, Pete, is there's the trade-off between the several smaller protected areas that cumulatively include all the species that are the contiguous.
Yep, on average, yep.
On average, but the distinction is that you have different species in each replicate, and therefore the species interactions all of the species are not included in one smaller replicate that you would see across the single larger.
That's right. There's two issues. One big one has more individuals per species that are interacting, right?
Right.
The second is there's more species to interact. And the third really is there's just more species in that conservation replicate because this is really the other part of the MLPA consideration, which is to, you know, essentially to conserve these areas. So, you know, it was brought up in the sense of math, I think, to tell you the truth. You know, do you end up with the same? Yeah, if you add them all together. Do you end up with the same level of intactness? I would say no.
Oh, yeah, this is Larry.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're not talking about statistical replication here. I mean,
no.
Would these replicates ever be used in a statistical design?
No. We're just saying, because it was brought up, that you could, in fact, the question was, could you end up with the same value if you had two halves versus one whole?
So you have you have an area and it's got fragmented beaches.
Yeah, or actually, even more to the point, you have two areas, they might be separated by several miles, and in each of the two, you got half of the desired habitat.
Okay.
And so in between, you might not have, it might not be an MPA at all, it might be just open. But within a bioregion, you have, if you add all the pieces together, you have enough to be considered a replicate. Yeah.
Okay.
It really comes down fundamentally to whether the currency is the number of species that are accumulating across several MPAs with smaller habitats in each one, or whether it's the species interactions and the number of species interactions at a given ecosystem.
This is Dan, and I think, one, to be consistent with the other areas, but two, I think the original intent.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
You're breaking up, Dan.
Okay. How about now? Is that any better?
That is better.
Okay. I think, to stick with... Now I've lost my train of thought. to be consistent with what the other areas did, and then also, I think the original intent of this was to preserve the interactions, and so I would say, you know, going with the one area, the one whole versus two halves would, you know, that would be a better choice, you know, to stick with what other areas have done, and also to stick with the original intent, which I think was to preserve those interactions.
Steve, I think, does anybody else have anything cogent they really want to say at this point in time? I think this is something we all have to think about a little bit more than this, and, you know, we're running pretty far behind in our agenda.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest that we try to find a time in our face-to-face meeting to revisit this, because what we really need to do is to decide whether we're going to make a change in how we make these evaluations. And at this point in time, we're not. But, you know, if anybody would like to consider this and raise the case that we should, then they probably should have the opportunity to bring that up. But I don't think we're going to be able to get that done now very, very readily. Is everybody okay with that?
Yep.
All right, so we're going to go to the public now for public comment, and this is a general public comment session. How many do we have lined up, operator?
Currently, we don't have any.
Well, I thought we had a couple of people who really wanted to do this.
Okay, we do have two that have just queued up. And
also,
just if somebody is having difficulties.
Yeah, yes. I was just going to let you know that Joe X-Line has also been trying to press star 1 and for some reason is not able to get through.
I was just going to suggest if they're on a speakerphone, pick up the handset before they press it. Sometimes if the speaker is on, it won't recognize it.
Okay. Let's put the first person on, and hopefully Joe can get on there.
We have Lester Steele. Please go ahead.
Lester, how are you? Are you there, Lester? It doesn't appear that we can hear Lester, so let's go to the next person, and hopefully Lester can get unmuted and get back in the queue. Go ahead.
And just a reminder to folks to unmute your phone if you've muted it. It's star 6.
Star 6 to unmute.
We have James Hudnall. Please go ahead.
Hi, James.
Hi. Okay, this is comment not directed to specific agenda item, right?
You have 2 minutes. That's correct.
Gotcha. Uh-huh. All right. I'm a marine mammal guy. I'm actually a member of the Society for Marine Mammalogy, but my interest in the MLPA process is benefits to fish and invertebrates. And I don't mean to belabor one particular point, but you'll recall earlier I posed a question to the panel about whether the La Jolla Harbor Seal Rookery was being considered as a unique habitat. And Susan Cheevers responded to my question with a comment that the La Jolla Harbor Seal haulout would be considered. But she said this at the stakeholder meeting on the 14th that this haulout was omitted from the list of South Coast significant rookeries because of a lawsuit. And at that time, she said the omission was the recommendation of the scientific panel. That's why I wanted to bring this to your attention. I'm a plaintiff in the new lawsuit regarding this harbor seal rookery. And I would sincerely hope that this group has not downgraded or omitted the La Jolla Harbor Seal rookery for a non-scientific reason. All marine mammals and their rookeries obviously should be evaluated on their ecosystem role and their value to the ecosystem. One of the things you should note from Susan is that she's calling this a harbor seal haulout. Well, there's a big difference between a haulout and a rookery, as you all know, I'm sure. There were 44 pups born at this rookery last year. It's been recognized by National Marine Fisheries as a rookery. but Jim Leckie, in charge of the Office of Protected Resources at NIMS, has been trying to get rid of this rookery and the problems associated with it. So you may see internal politics within NIMS affecting the recommendation coming from NIMS. So the reason I'm interested in this rookery is that I will be proposing a single marine protected area, which will include the La Jolla Harbor Seal Rookery at the south end. So I just ask that the playing field stay level and that you be aware that there may be some politics not related directly to you all in the panel, but related to internal activities within NIMS. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else in line for comments?
While we're waiting
yes.
for the operator to do that, can I just provide one clarification?
Of course.
With regard to the presentation that Susan made at the last regional stakeholder group meeting, there was a misunderstanding. What Susan was saying was that she had not included that information in the PowerPoint presentation because of the political nature and not wanting to get into that debate at the regional stakeholder group meeting. But as she clarified earlier today on the call, that area, in fact, is included in the evaluation that the science advisory team is conducting.
Good. Okay. Any other public comments? Anybody else lined up in the queue?
Yes, we have three lined up.
Okay. Now, I need to again say that if you're a member of the public and you wish to speak, you need to get into the queue now so that we have an understanding of how many are lined up so we don't continue to have people add in after this group has spoke. Go ahead and let the next person on, please.
Joe Exline, please go ahead.
Hello there. My name is Joe Exline with Vic Finn and Oceanside Anglers Club. I've been pushing my button to talk on the last topic. Apparently, there were some technical difficulties. I just wanted some clarification. In the previous documents, it says that the minimum size was 9 square miles, but also included in there was a 3-mile coastline along shore span. And my question was, you know, generally there's some confusion on that, and I wanted to make sure that the only qualification for a minimum size of an MPA is the 9 square miles, even if you're a little short on the longshore span. And then the second issue on this new table that I see, the soft bottom from 0 to 30 meters, it appears as though the hole from 0 feet to 30 meters has to be soft bottom to qualify for the 1.14 linear miles. So if there's a kelp bed running through the front, you know, in front of my beach, I guess I cannot count that as part of my soft bottom habitat. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, right now we're taking comment. We'll entertain that.
And then the third thing is the shallow rocky reef and kelp forest. If there's kelp there and it doesn't quite meet the current length because of the studies that were done, but yet there's habitat like a rocky reef to enable the kelp to grow on a good season like this year, is that also counted? That's the end of my comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next up, we have the next.
We have, yes, Diane Pleschner-Steele, please go ahead.
Thank you.
Hello, Diane. You've got 2 minutes.
Hi, folks. I've been trying to, like Joe, get in for the last half hour, and my question had to do with the new computations for soft bottom. And I'm not clear. I know you've gone from 9 square to 8 square, but one of the things that I was very concerned about was that you're still referring to the triennial trawl cruise data, which goes outside 3 miles, stops at Point Conception. And my question is, how applicable is that to Southern California? Seems to me that that data should not, because it's a federal waters issue above Point Conception and doesn't have a relationship to Southern California. So I'd appreciate an answer to that and perhaps go back and revisit that 8 square.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next person up.
We have Bill. Please go ahead.
Bill, you on the line there? Bill there? One more chance for Bill. Do we have any others queued up?
One more just to queue up. We'll take that. We have Joel Greenberg. Please go ahead.
Hey, Joel.
Hello. This is Joel Greenberg once again, South Coast Regional Stakeholder Group, and I just wanted to place some additional emphasis on what Joe Exline brought up. It is a great deal of confusion over the geometry issue. In other words, can a reserve or an MPA that fails to meet the longshore span still count because it does indeed meet the square miles? And there are probably a few areas along our coast that are, because the coast runs diagonally, it doesn't run north and south or east and west, where that becomes even more critical. So I would hope you answer that. And the only second comment I have about that is the general comment I made before, is that there is a technical challenge afoot here in this format to be able to do this, and you've seen this as it goes on through the day, for people to actually be able to interact. I'm satisfied that you all have done a good job of, between yourselves, settling issues that can be done in this format properly and deferring the decisions to a live meeting that you cannot. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Any others lined up?
We do have one more lining up. We're getting the correct information from that line.
Okay, this will be the last public comment for this period. So we'll take it. Are you ready for it now?
We're waiting for that line to queue back up.
Next up, we're going to move on to item Roman numeral 3 on the agenda, the MPA design guidelines and evaluation methods continued. And we're going to hear an update on spacing guidelines and evaluations methods from SATI. Obviously, we're running well behind. Not that badly, but at least a half hour behind. So our folks who are coming up will try to watch this a little bit so we can end our meeting in an appropriate time. SATI, you'll be queued up and ready once we get to the last public comment in. So do we have the public comment ready to go now?
Yes, we do. Joe Wynn, please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Joe. Yes, you have two minutes, Joe.
Thank you very much for allowing me to speak, and I want to thank you for the work that you have done. Also, thank you, the operator, for trying so hard to get me on. We've been trying the last half an hour. I want to have a comment about the La Jolla haul-out. My son and I do quite a bit of kayak fishing, and for that particular area, the access to the whole La Jolla kelp bed is from the Avenida de la Playa. And being a father of an 8-year-old with a 10-year-old, we do have a short distance that we can paddle to. If the La Jolla haul-out is going to be the southern extension, I'm afraid that would shut out kayak fishing for the whole family. And I think we kayak fishers don't get the same consideration. The other things I want to make sure that I mention is that I come from Northern California, and up there we have La Jolla, we have Seal Hall out, and in Monterey and Moss Landing area, and I want to make sure, as Susan has mentioned, that the designation be consistent in between the areas. But overall, I'm very impressed with the work of the panel, and I want to thank you for your work.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. That's it for public comment for now. I think we're going to move on to the agenda, and we will move to SATI. Item Roman numeral 3C on the agenda.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for inviting me to give these updates on spacing guidelines and evaluation and modeling evaluation. Can you see my screen okay?
We don't have your screen up.
We do now, yeah.
Yeah, we do. Okay, I think we do. Put your first slide up beyond the initiative slide, and I think we'll all recognize it, too.
Okay. Do you see the change now?
We are good.
Okay. Let me go back to the initiative slide just to give some brief background. You'll have an opportunity to discuss the MPA spacing guidelines and evaluation at your in-person meeting on the 27th. And I want to highlight some of the background documents, if I could, just right here. This is attachment I-1, which was distributed. And I'd like to encourage you to read through this document and look at the detail here and bring any questions or comments about this document to your meeting on the 27th.
So this is important that we pay attention to this document. This will be one of the items that we will be spending some time on at our face-to-face meeting. And you all have been sent this.
That's right. And I'll refer back to this from time to time during the update, just so you can see how we step through the rationale for the spacing guidelines and evaluation. So first I'll begin with a summary of connectivity in Southern California. These really are the basis for thinking about how different areas are connected and how marine protected areas might serve as a functional network. The general findings are derived from a study of connectivity based on the Regional Ocean Modeling System, or the ROMS simulations that were conducted by UC Santa Barbara and UCLA. And the main conclusions are that in Southern California, connectivity is heterogeneous and asymmetrical. The mean flow doesn't really describe the kinds of patterns that we see. There are connections that do occur between these bioregions. So within the Southern California Bight, we see some connectivity, although as recognized by the science advisory team, there are distinct biological differences between the bioregions. Generally, there's a strong poleward transport along the mainland that is driven primarily by the Southern California countercurrent. And the
all still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, Steve, but I'm getting a lot of interference. Can you hear me okay?
You're good now.
Okay, great. So back to that point, the strong poleward transport is primarily driven by the Southern California countercurrent, and the model predicts some retention in the Santa Barbara Channel due to the clockwise gyre and some retention around San Clemente Island. But the modelers wanted to point out that the ROMS model has a limited ability to predict some small-scale water movement near shore, so it does likely underestimate that retention. So the modelers are using the ROMS model plus together with known life history characteristics of representative fishes and invertebrates. And I just want to point out that those fishes and invertebrates are listed here in this document in Table 1. And these are representative species that were selected for the modeling exercise as characteristics with a variety of different life history characteristics. The modeling results suggest that for species with short level duration, the mainland and the islands are not strongly connected. For species with longer larval duration, the connection between the mainland and the islands is stronger, but the connection from the islands to the mainland is not quite as strong. And they also note that the connection between the islands is not as strong except for species with longer larval duration. So this really sets the stage for thinking about how to apply MPA spacing in the study region. For the mainland coast, the master plan guidelines for spacing likely apply to the mainland coast of Southern California as well as the study regions in Central California and North Central California because the movement of larvae is quite similar in those different regions. However, the MPAs at the Channel Islands should be evaluated differently from other regions along the mainland coast because of the complex geography and oceanography of that region, leading to higher levels of retention in some areas and less connectivity. So taking the guideline from the master plan for marine protected areas, the SAD has recommended that for an objective of facilitating dispersal of important bottom-dwelling fish and invertebrate groups among MPAs based on the known scales of larval dispersal, that MPAs should be placed within 50 to 100 kilometers. And these findings are based on different data sets that have been published describing population persistence, larval dispersal, and larval transport. And those are documented in the supporting document. The scales of larval movement vary so much across species,
And so the short-distance dispersers really are the ones that pose the biggest challenges for connections between MPAs. And these guidelines are intended to help ensure the connectivity between marine life populations protected in adjacent MPAs. Excuse me. So the SAT evaluation work group will conduct a spacing analysis of proposed MPAs along the mainland coast of Southern California, consistent with what happened in previous regions. And in order to do that, they'll tabulate the maximum gaps between MPAs relative to the spacing guidelines. And because populations targeted for protection occur only in suitable habitats, that evaluation has to consider the spacing of the key habitats separately. And consistent with other evaluations, the SAT will consider only MPAs or MPA clusters of sufficient size to contain adult movement ranges, and only MPAs or MPA clusters that include sufficient amounts of each key habitat, which was discussed this morning or this afternoon by Pete, will be included. And consistent with the other guidelines, it was noted that only MPAs or MPA clusters at the three highest levels of protection, high, moderate high, or very high, will be included in the analysis. So this is the same approach that was taken in North Central California, and it's being recommended for Southern California. Now, the connectivity between the Channel Islands and between the islands and the mainland is influenced and limited by the complex geography and ocean circulation, among other factors. And so this simple guideline does not account for these complex variables. So the SAT modeling work group has recommended that guidelines other than spacing, which are described in the master plan, should serve as a starting point for design of MPAs at the Channel Islands. And those guidelines are just briefly listed here. And the recommendation is that the regional stakeholder group should use these guidelines as a starting point for MPA design at the Channel Islands. So considering the bioregions, including the three bioregions that encompass the islands, the level of protection offered by the type of MPAs, the representation of key and unique habitats at the islands, replication of key habitats within the entire study region, including the islands, and considering individual MPA size. So together, these guidelines should form the basis of the first set of proposals for MPAs at the Channel Islands. And once the first proposals have been submitted, then the SAT modeling work group can provide a more comprehensive and integrated evaluation of the MPA network proposals using spatially explicit models, which is another layer in evaluation of a variety of things, including MPA spacing. So the spatially explicit models will provide insight into predicted equilibrium biomass, larval supply, fish yield, and for one of the models, fishery profits, for each of the proposed MPA networks. The models confirm the assumptions of larval movement along the mainland coast, because the models actually integrate the larval dispersal kernel, or the way that larvae were modeled, that was derived from the ROMS-based simulations we talked about earlier. And it's so there's consistency between the way that the model assumes larval movement is happening and the way and the basis for the spacing guidelines along the mainland. Because of that, the SAT has confidence that the models can also be used to evaluate connectivity at the Channel Islands, and that is for individual larvae that move beyond the local retention zones and may be transported to other islands or to other places on the same island. And importantly, the models synthesize the potential contributions of the proposed MPA networks regardless of the size or spacing, so they can accommodate a variety of different approaches and may integrate a range of different sizes and a range of different spacing in a more comprehensive way. So I'm not going to go into the details of how the model worked, how the model works in this particular update, but I'm going to transition to another update in just a moment about the modeling evaluation. I just want to recommend that folks, again, go back to this document, which describes in detail the basis for the conclusions about connectivity. And if you move through this, you'll see the description of those species that have been selected for the modeling exercise. And this is by no means intended to limit the interpretation of the model, but these species were selected because they have a range of spawning seasons across the year and a range of larval durations from shorter to longer. There is an explanation of the design of recommended design of MPAs along the mainland coast and at the Channel Islands, and finally a description of how the models will be integrated. So please take a look at that and be ready for further discussion on this topic on the 27th. Thanks.
Any questions? Anybody like to weigh in on Satie's presentation? Okay, so we will be looking at advancing pretty far on this issue at our face-to-face meeting. And so obviously one of the homework assignments is to carefully read this document, I-1, and be prepared to approve the approach that this work group will be recommending for us at our face-to-face meeting. Any other comments or questions, or anybody like to say anything about this to Satie at the moment?
Steve Wirtz, I just had a quick question. The regarding this presentation and Pete's earlier one, are the biodiversity curves, do they integrate both the island species richness and the mainland? Is that data combined?
Pete, are you on?
This is Mark Carr. I don't know if Pete's on, but it does.
Yeah. I'm on. This is Pete. In some cases they do, in some cases they don't. And I say that because, as an example, for the SQIRP data, those were just taken around the whole bite. And for some of the other types of data, the crane data in particular, there was limited data from the north part of the mainland. And for some of the intertidal stuff, we did it by bioregion. And then took the then integrated across those because the bioregions were pretty different from one another. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Other comments for Satie.
Mark Carr. I think this issue of connectivity, especially to the extent that we can explore it within bioregions as well, will be particularly useful when we think about the consideration of the proposals of the Department of Defense and those discussions?
Correct.
That's a good point, Mark, and I think tables like this matrix here, which is embedded in the document, will help with that kind of discussion because here we have this whole array of sites from which we are modeling larval dispersal. And we can look here at the results based on the actual ocean circulation models to see how connected each place is to every other place, with the strong connections being highlighted in red. So we can come back to this and really investigate the linkages between San Clemente and San Nicolas and the other islands.
Thank you. And I know we'll be drawing on that. Okay. Any other comments for Satie? Okay, I think we're going to move then to item E on the agenda. Satie, you've done C&D, correct?
I have.
Good, thank you.
Oh, wait, hang on. I've done C. I can briefly describe D, and I would like to urge the science advisory team also to review this document here, bioeconomic modeling, which will be the basis for a discussion at your meeting on the 27th as well.
D1, I don't see that listed on the agenda document, D1, for our meeting on the face-to-face. It was mentioned here. Okay, we'll have to look at that. So, folks, read that document. T, do you want to say anything else on this?
I can briefly describe what's in it if you think we have time.
Well, you know, what I'm a little perplexed on this one because, let me look here real quickly. It looks
Jesus
like...
is Jason.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
If I can
weigh
in a little bit. I think what has gone wrong are some...
some mislabeling.
Yes, mislabeling through the IQ.
It's D1 and J1.
Yep, there you go.
Okay. So this does come up next time, and I think what we should do for because of our time frame, since we're going to deal with this next time, is that folks read this document and be ready for this at the next meeting, okay? All right, let's go on to levels of protection. We're also going to have discussion on levels of protection at our next meeting, and this is a state setter, an update for that. Larry, we're going to ask you to try to move along through this a little more rapidly than the time allotted, if you could, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So
the
ball's handed to Larry Allen.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Everybody hear Larry?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, this is a quick update and stuff that we've talked about before. We just want to let you know that things we're working on and some things that we'll be wanting to discuss at the face-to-face with everyone. I just have four slides here really quickly. Yeah, this is the conceptual model that we accepted at one of our last meetings. It's the one that actually made my head stop hurting when I considered what the level of protection actually meant. This is what we've been using this species.
Larry, we are having a little trouble hearing you, I think. And folks, if you are not... if you're waiting on the side, you might want to mute your phone. We're getting some noise, background noise, too, I think. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay. Is that better?
That's much better.
Okay. So anyway, this is the model we're using, and we're now putting relevant species through it and working through the southern region. We are dealing with a different set of important species here that need to be assigned. So with the group and with Emily Sarman's great help, we're moving down through and we're assessing levels of protection for these different species. Next slide, please. He's got this. So as we stand now, this is the table you've seen a number of times. It is now incorporating some of these species that we're working on. The ones in white are those that we've made decisions about, and we're going to be recommending them to the SAT for approval at the face-to-face meeting on January 27th. The ones in gray are still being considered. These are some of them are remnants from the North Central Coast, but some we just haven't really come to a decision about. We're still collecting information, bycatch is particularly important, and things like that. So we'll be further discussing levels of protection for these species, or more appropriately, for activities which take these species out of proposed MPAs in the future. Next, please. Jason, do you have this? Go ahead and change. Okay,
yes.
So these are the topics that you should get ready to think about and discuss. We have had a request from the sport fishing community to reconsider the 50-meter, 30-meter cutoff for assigning particularly very high to high moderate distinction, and we have been talking about that. We've had some lively discussions on some phone conferences. We still don't really know where we sit here, although... the 30 meters, I think, we just need to have this a wider discussion of this. The 30-meter cutoff is essentially ecologically valid because it's the end of the shallow reefs, and there's a very nice cutoff in soft bottoms there. But it doesn't provide much of a buffer around kelp beds and things like that. And we're concerned about that if we're talking about coastal pelagic fishes being taken in an MPA in a conservation area. We don't know. We have the issue of associated catch or bycatch that could be a problem. So we hope to have a recommendation from the work group, although
hoping to get together on Monday, at least in another conference call or a face-to-face, about this 30 to 50 meter cutoff. We, as I mentioned earlier, we want to prepare for a discussion of the potential approvals of those species that we've already assigned that were in white on the previous slide. And we have had discussions and put into the document as an addition coastal pelagic squid and urchins. We may be recommending LOPs on those, or at least putting them up for discussion. Urchins are a particularly controversial one, I might add. The next slide, and that'll be it. Okay, other topics that we need to delve into, the catch and release fishing, I think is really critical, particularly when we're considering bycatch and potential activities in conservation areas. Some of the species that were assigned in the North Central Coast and have yet to really be re-examined include halibut and these things here that you see in the middle paragraph. And because we're in a completely different biogeographic region, as everyone knows, we are probably going to extend the list to some of these other very abundant and, in most cases, commercially important or recreationally important fish, blacksmith and half moons, and maybe add some more to the list as we get input from the SAT. That's about all I got.
Very good, Larry. Thank you.
Okay.
Any questions for Larry? And remember, we're teeing this up for some approvals at our next face-to-face meeting. Anybody like to say anything with regard to the levels of protection effort?
This is Mark Carr. A couple of comments. One comment is that you'll notice that there are a lot of items that the level of protection subcommittee is grappling with that are not actually identified in the document that has been distributed. So
right.
I hope everybody recognizes that there are a lot of species and fishing gear that we're working on, even though they may not be identified in the current state of this written document. And then the only other comment is that one aspect that was neither captured in the document or in Larry's presentation that we still are working on is the idea of cumulative impacts of the extraction of a number of different species with different kinds of gears, rather than sort of defaulting to the lowest level of protection designation.
Okay. Larry, you got that?
Yeah, this... You know, we are still considering this more quantitative model that Ray Hilborn has proposed. I think it makes sense, but we haven't really gotten any further along on it. We really need to have some realistic list of activities that will be proposed, and of course, those activities will affect different species. And then what you do with the accumulation of three or four different activities is still a big question.
Very good. Additional comments? Okay, so we need to be prepared for this at the next meeting. This is another one of the documents that you're going to want to spend some time on and review. That's document E1. And with that, I think we're going to move on to item F on the agenda, which is the birds and mammals evaluation methods. This is document F1, briefing document F1. And if you recall, we had moved this along quite well at our last face-to-face meeting. There were a very small number of suggestions, so we're looking at approving this document if we're able to. Before I turn this over to Susan, I think, Susan, you're there ready to go, I hope, correct?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Before I turn the floor over to you, I just want to say make one quick comment. We did get some public comment asking for some interpretations of some of the evaluations on our habitat representation and habitat replication. And for those that actually made some of those statements or made some of those comments and had some of those questions, you know, if you can email those specifically to the MLPA group, then we'll be able to look sharply at exactly what your question is and hopefully be able to give you an answer. It's a little hard to do that in this kind of format, but if we can get specifically what you want answered in terms of or interpreted, then I think we can work with that. So with that, would you please try to email those in so we can get them and entertain them. And with that, I want to turn the floor over to Susan.
Great. Thanks for that, Steve. That'll be a great way to handle those questions. What we wanted to do, we presented the document to you at the last meeting, and to sort of facilitate discussion of this, we prepared a really brief presentation to review what the methods are. And basically we want, I'm going to review the North Central Coast methods because we use that as our starting template. And we then just modified them a little bit, expanded them really to fit the South Coast study area. So, Jason, thanks for putting the slides up, and if you'll just change them as we move along, that would be great. In the North Central Coast, the evaluation methods included looking at special closures and MPAs that prohibited activities that might interfere with breeding or resting, which are the would then be the areas most likely to benefit birds and mammals. And we also included MPAs that had proposed regulations that might benefit forage species by protecting foraging habitats that were near breeding or resting haulouts. And they conducted those evaluations looking at basically the proportion of breeding or resting animals in each of the proposed sites, whether they're special closures or MPAs, and by bioregions that were defined for that region. So for each of the species on the most likely to benefit list, the proportion of all animals that were breeding in a study area that are breeding at a site and in a bioregion were calculated for that area, and the proportion resting similarly. And then there was, they calculated for all species combined for those species on the most likely to benefit list, the proportion breeding and resting, again, by site and bioregion. Can we have the next slide, Jason? And so we're proposing to do essentially the same thing for the South Coast study area, that is, look at special closures and MPAs, evaluate those special closure and MPA areas that prohibit activities that might interfere with breeding or resting of these species. Also look at MPAs where proposed regulations might protect foraging habitats that are have been shown to be important to these species, and then to calculate the proportion and or resting at each of the sites. Modifications are the species that will be included, the species likely to benefit list, as you know, is changing to a sliding scale. So the species we envision including will be those getting the highest scores on that to benefit list, and those for which we also have data about the numbers breeding and resting at specific sites. And then we'll recognize the bioregions that I think we adopted at the last meeting and calculate the proportions by bioregion for each of these. In the South Coast study area. And then for the foraging analysis, there's three components to this, and the first one is essentially the same as the North Coast study area. They looked at, I think it was 1 mile along the coast and 3 miles out, and we're proposing to look at 3 miles along the coast and 3 miles out to evaluate whether there would be foraging benefit to some of the bird and mammal colonies. And we've listed some of the species that we expect might benefit from sites that protect foraging areas. And I'll just let you read those there. And then the two additions to the foraging analysis that we thought were appropriate for the South Coast study area are those that identify prey hotspots that are in proposed MPAs, but that are not specifically at colonies. And to do that, because there's upwelling and retention areas in the South Coast area that are pretty notable. We propose to look at ADSEE density data for a number of the bird species and encounter rate data for the coastal bottlenose dolphin animals that we think will get at that characteristic. And then also within the South Coast area to look at estuaries and coastal beaches. This is different than the North Coast study area. And consider species that will benefit these areas because they will benefit resident and migrant shorebirds and waterfowl, and that will calculate the proportion of each species known to be in these type of habitats that are going to be protected within a proposed MPA. So in a nutshell, that's what the proposal is for doing the evaluation for birds and mammals specifically. So there's five characteristics in the document, or five aspects of this evaluation listed in the document, and it looks at breeding, resting, and three foraging aspects that might benefit these animals. So I think that's it for the overview. If people want to ask questions, or others from the group want to add to that summary, we can move on.
Okay, very good. We're going to ask the SAT members if they would like to comment on Susan's presentation. And we're going to look at this document, F1. We'll kind of go page by page. Anybody has anything to input, they should do so. And we'll do that now. But before we get there, I'd like to ask those members of the public that would like to add their input to this document, any public input on this document, if you would hit star 1 now to get in the queue. We would appreciate that. After we have a little bit of work on this from the SAT, we'll ask you for your comments. So, first of all, anybody have any comments, SAT members' comments on Susan's presentation, the content of it? Anything, anybody like to offer a comment, suggestion, question, anything on that? Speak up now.
This is Dominic.
Dominic.
So, and what prompted my comment, or probably a question, is that, you know, in the information that we got for the public, from the public in that document we received today or yesterday, I can't remember when, Jim Estes made a comment, and I think it was relative to the military operations. But one of the things he said is that there's a colony of sea otters out of San Nicolas Island. And sea otters are not on the list currently the way you have the document. And I might have talked to you a little bit about this before, but and maybe if the sea otters become a species that's likely to benefit, maybe they would get on this list. But I just thought I'd ask for any comments you might have about the situation with sea otters. You know, they were a threatened species, and what you thought about that as you were putting this document together.
You know, I didn't think about them specifically, I have to be honest. And I guess we'll have to see where they come out on the species to benefit list once those criteria are set. And I'm also, quite honestly, not sure what data are available to us for an evaluation. Can somebody help me out there?
Well, I know Fish and Wildlife Service and then later, I guess it was part of USGS, how they switched over bureaucratically at one point. Jim Estes had done population studies out at San Nicolas. I don't know what is available in the area just south and east of Point Conception, but I do know that there was some work done down at San Nicolas Island.
Yeah, you're right, and I know they've done some work just south of the point too. So I'll look into it and get back to you. How about that?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, anybody else like to comment on this? Okay. Anybody like to do anything before we move into the public?
Steve, Mark Carr here. Hey, Susan and Dominic, if you want to shoot us a request for the information, we can pass it on to Tim Tinker and Jim Estes of the Fish and Wildlife Service that actually does the otter surveys out at San Nicolas Island.
Oh, that would be great, Mark. I'll do that.
Okay. All right, shall we go to the public then? Operator, do we have anybody lined up for the public?
Yes, we have 4.
Okay, let's start them up.
Okay, our first one is Joe Eckline. Please go ahead.
Actually, I pushed my button for the previous document, and I made the comment that that document was not published for public review for your, you know, the evaluation methods, and that was it.
Thank you.
Okay. Next one.
We have Diane Pleschner-Steele. Please go ahead.
Diane?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good. Thanks. I just wanted to make a comment on the levels of protection that when Larry Allen was noting the request that came in for the consideration of reducing the high LOP from 50 meters to 30 for the pelagic fisheries, that also, we were a part of that request as well. So I just wanted to make sure that you have that consideration for coastal pelagic finfish by purse seine and squid by purse seine. And to let you know that in Southern California, especially, the habitats, the fishery typically operates a little bit deeper than it does in the Central Coast. And so you had rated the CPS finfish by seine as high outside 50 and moderate high inside 50, and squid also. So I'm hoping that you're going to consider us along with the sport fish request. I think that's 30 meter instead of 50. And one of the primary reasons is that those fish travel along those bands as that the PowerPoint that we submitted to you indicates. And so if you push us outside 50, you basically kill the fishery. And there's minimal bycatch in the purse seine nets as well as minimal bottom contact. So we would appreciate your consideration and making sure that you consider us in addition to the hook and line.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We have another caller up.
Yes, Joe Wynn, please go ahead.
Yes, again, I think we're coming close to the day, so I want to thank you again for allowing me to participate and for the work that you have done. I just want to make a quick comment on the level of protection I see on the high and moderate level on Table 2 of Document E1. There was mentioning of hook and line, but there was no mentioning of spear, and I know that for myself and a lot of people I know, that's a relatively popular activity. So I was wondering why the distinction there, but in the moderate low, there would be mention of spear. And but overall, I thought that the work was done very well. Thank you.
Thank you. And how many more do we have in line, and who's next?
Our last one dropped off out of queue, so we don't have any further ones.
Okay. All right, so now I'd like to hear a motion then to approve the document, which would be F1. Can I have a motion from someone to do that, please?
I motion that. This is Mark Carr.
Moved by Mark. We have a seconder, please. Anybody still online out there who'd like to offer a second to this?
Second, Larry Allen.
Larry will second it. Okay. Any further discussion on document F1 and the bird and mammal evaluation procedures? Okay. So let's go to a vote then. If you would like to adopt this document for this point in time, would you please say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Any no's? And any abstentions? So we have no no's and no abstentions. Therefore, this passes. Thank you, Susan. And so we're now going to go on to item Roman numeral 4 on the agenda. And lo and behold, we're almost back on schedule. This is Mike Prawl. Mike, are you there? Questions? Okay, staff folks, who's up on this one?
I've got that, Steve. This is Jason. Mike might not be able to get unmuted there.
Okay.
So I'll try and go through this quickly. It basically comes down to the document for this F1 is the set of questions that were presented to you at your last meeting from the RSG's November 18th and 19th meeting. And we basically just want to request that between today and your meeting on next Tuesday, you look at the few responses that we've been able to tackle in the time in between. The one response in particular is to question 1 about halibut. We ask that you give that response a review and hopefully come to the meeting on Tuesday with some comments or suggested edits to that so we can look to try and approve of that response and get that back out to the RSG after your meeting on Tuesday. there's a few other staff responses provided in the document, and the status of some of the other responses as still being developed. And so you can have a look at those.
760 hit.
And we will talk about those a bit more on Tuesday. That's all we've got for that, Steve.
Okay, thank you. So we're at the stage in the game here now where we're going to try to wrap up and identify what our next meeting steps would be. So can you put the agenda up on? Thank you very much. And we'd like to move now to the agenda that will be for our next face-to-face meeting so we can preview what we have coming up. So that should be up there now. Meeting January 27, 2009. Can we get that up there, please?
Actually, Steve, I think this particular version doesn't have it, but I can scrounge for it here quickly.
Oh, I see. So in the meantime, and what I want to do with that is just simply quickly go through what we have before us so that everybody knows, you know, what they need to do. We have a couple of things here. We need to make a decision on how we're going to between now and our next face-to-face meeting, probe a little bit more with regard to the military issues. We also need to identify which SAT members might be available for the January 29th RSG work session. We want to review the items that will be requiring action for our January 27th meeting. So we have nothing but this one then, huh? So let's go up to the top, January 27th, please, right, or at the bottom of this page. Can you move it down, scroll it down a little bit? Are everybody able to see this? So obviously we have some updates. The design guidelines, let me just say that there are three things here that are going to come up under Roman numeral 2, and they involve the methods for evaluating MPA size and MPA spacing, the guidelines methods for evaluating. And the documents that you're going to need to be prepared for, in other words, to read and be prepared for, would be documents H1, I1, and J1. I think J1 has another number on it today. That's D1 today. It'll be J1 next time. So SAT members should very, very much make sure you read those documents prior to our face-to-face meeting. And you should be prepared for us to approve what we're able to agree on and approve with respect to the size and spacing guidelines. We've been working on these for a while, and I think Satie has set the stage for that pretty well. Now, if you scroll down a little bit further, we have coming up, and this is Roman numeral 3, we also have the additional discussions that will take place on the level of protection. And this is going to be briefing document K1. And here's another one for us to look over prior to our face-to-face meeting, because we will probably most likely be moving in and attempting to approve at least additional pieces of the levels of protection effort. And now if you'll move down to the next item, number L, which is water quality. We're also in the same position with water quality. We've had a couple of runs at the water quality issues. Work group has been working on that. And I think that document L1 is also available to you. You want to be reading that so that you'll be able to have an opportunity to be informed when we make a motion to approve parts or all of the water quality effort. Now when we move on to item 4, we've got an update. This is on habitat quality topics. And then we're back to another decision that we'll likely be making, which is Roman numeral 5, species likely to benefit from MPAs. If the group remembers, we had been making progress on that. We kind of had that on the back burner for a bit. The group's been working away. But this is document N2. And this is that draft list of species likely to benefit from MPAs in the South Coast study region. And if I recall, we were going to have a few of those species run through the protocol that Rich and his group had had developed. And that's basically the agenda for next time. We will need to be working on the responses to questions, and there'll be some issues with that that we'll deal with. Okay, so does anybody have any questions about what's coming up before us? All right, so I think that the main thing here is these documents, I think, are in your hands now. At least we have more than a day to look at them. And therefore, I think that, you know, reading them over and having them prepared would be the right thing to do for us so we can really make some forward progress at our January 27th meeting. Okay. The SAT members who are able to attend the January 29th RSG work session. Jason, maybe one of you can tell us a little bit about what you think is going to happen at this session, and let's see who we might have available.
Yeah, sure, Steve. So at the RSG work session, it'll really be one of the first opportunities that the RSG has to sit down and start thinking about where they want to start placing MPAs, and it's their first day really of drafting or beginning the work to draft MPA proposals. And they'll be broken up into, I believe it is, three working groups and sort of branched off to work as subgroups. And so from the SAT, we like to have folks there to help answer questions, help talk about a little more of the details and the evaluations if those types of questions come up, and really just help provide some ecology and science background to the RSG as they work through those sessions.
Where is the meeting going to be held?
That one I'm going to punt to Melissa because I'm not actually sure, Steve.
Melissa?
I'm sorry, which date?
This is the RSG work group meeting on January 29th.
That's being held at the Embassy Suites, LAX North.
Okay. All right. What do we have working group members who are able to make themselves available for that meeting?
This is Larry. What time of the day is this? Is it all day?
9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Hi, Steve. This is Sati,
yeah.
And I just wanted to let you know that I will be at that meeting all day, and I will be providing an update about what has happened during our conference call as well as our in-person meeting on the 27th to give everyone an idea of where the SAT is relative to the evaluation document.
Good.
And, you know, this is Evan Fox, just to give you a sense of what the agenda looks like for that meeting. The first half of the day is really going to be following up on some loose ends and mostly kind of presentations in plenary. The second half of the day will be when the regional stakeholder group members are actually broken out into their groups and rolling up their sleeves and starting to think about where MPAs might be placed. So if we have to strategize time for when SAT members can be present, we might think about which of those makes more sense. And I think maybe having them there the second half of the day might make more sense, just so people can ask questions about evaluations or perhaps where habitats or species exist and things like that.
Well, if I could do in the afternoon, this is Larry, I can commit to it. I have something in the morning, though.
Okay. Do we have anybody else? Dan, is Dan still online? Dan Pondella, are you still there, my friend? Doesn't look like it. Okay, so Larry, we got you, and I guess we're going to have to do a little scrambling to figure out who else we might be able to get there. Let me just say that I think one of the things we should do at our next face-to-face meeting is work over the next two or three RSG meetings and get people signed up for it. I think we may be able to pass around a sheet. But we need to know from you staff members exactly what you just told Larry. Is this all day? Is it half a day? What is the time frame? Where is the meeting going to be? So at our next meeting, let's try to be prepared to move forward into February and March. I have one meeting on my schedule. It looks like it's February 10th, but I don't know when the next one is after that, and I don't have one between this January meeting, 26th meeting, this January meeting, and the February meeting. So that I have on the 10th, and I don't have anything until in the rest of February. So maybe we can do that at our next meeting and pass this around and try to make sure that we have a little of, you know, enough people there. Does that sound fair?
Sounds good.
Steve, could I, since rather than waiting to your next meeting, can I suggest we do this on Tuesday, the second half of this meeting, for those who will be there in person?
Yeah, that's what I meant at the face-to-face meeting that we're going to have, right?
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I think what we want to have at that meeting is we want to have literally
time.
A sign-up
okay.
sheet.
Yep.
For each of the RSG meetings, where they are, when, what time frame people would be needed.
Yep.
And we'll pass it around and make sure that we get enough people. I think that, we're scrambling on these things. And, here we are trying to find somebody for a date that is just a little ways away from us.
No, agreed. Okay? Totally. And can I also just so folks don't get confused, so we can have that sign-up sheet. We'll have the dates, the times, and the locations for each of those upcoming meetings laid out on Tuesday for folks to sign up. The other thing, too, is to highlight regard to your briefing documents. The documents that you have received today, some of them you will need on Tuesday because Tuesday is actually just the second half of your meeting. This is a two-day meeting. Today's part one, day one, and Tuesday is day two. So you will not receive a second copy of documents that you received for this meeting. So I apologize. There was some confusion with the preparation of the agenda where some of these documents have been listed twice with different numbers. You will only receive one copy. So the copy you have in your file or folder that you've saved with all these documents, you should hold on to because we will be referring to them again on Tuesday, and the agenda that you receive on Tuesday will be corrected and have the correct file numbers.
Okay, thank you. Now, with the last item I have, I just want to make two other reminders. We've agreed that we're going to email Jason to participate in the evaluation team. So you would be sending him an email and indicating the evaluation component that you, or components that you would like to participate in. And we also have an email to Emily, I think, that relates to whether you're able to serve as a source, a reviewer of, of an evaluation component for the habitat data. Is that correct?
That's correct, right.
Okay, good. All right. Who else do I have here? I have somebody who is here but can't talk. Dan, you're muted, huh? Okay, so...
We have a member of the public who had been trying to alert the operator that she wanted to make comment, Jen Feinberg. I'm not sure if she's still on the line, but she sent a message that she had been trying to submit a comment or a question.
Okay. Well, we need to, in some way, before we go to the public issue, we need to also now figure out how we're going to put a group together, get a group together to work on this military issue. And Dan has volunteered to do that. Dan Robinette, is that correct? Dan Robinette has done that. So I think that does anybody else have a particular desire to come into play here on this? I see this as a two-step process myself. I don't know that we still exactly know what the critical questions are that we as a science team need to address. You know, we can invent our own. We can take what has been said so far and, do whatever we want with regard to the science side of it. But I think that there are some more specific questions, and I would hope that we would get those so we would be able to focus directly on those as well as other issues that we thought were relevant. But I think we have a two-step process here. One is taking the initial steps to deal with this, and then secondly, sorting it out. So I have Dan Robinette and Dan Pondella who have indicated that they would be willing to work on this. I'm willing to do that. Anybody else in particular like to, volunteer to form this little sort of subgroup at the moment? And like I said, I think what we have to do first of all is figure out what's going on in another session, and then figure out what our work tasks are.
Steve, this is Dominic. I'll go ahead and volunteer.
All right. So Melissa, I think the way is Ken. Are you still on the line?
I am.
Okay. So I think the way we want to handle this at the moment is I think that we probably need to work out what we do next, and then what we do at our face-to-face meeting, and then what we do after that face-to-face meeting. We do know that we want to provide answers to the Blue Ribbon Task Force before their next meeting, which is, in the end of February, correct? Okay, so do you think we can get anything, can we advance anything here before our face-to-face meeting on Tuesday?
I guess I'm trying to get specifically to what we need to advance, Steve.
Well, I mean, what are we going to do between now and Tuesday, if anything? Are we going to have another? I mean, I think we need to know a little more about what where we're headed with this, and obviously to update again on Tuesday. But as I said, I think we want a little more specificity with regard to what we're looking at providing. And
I would suggest that perhaps the we organize a call with the co-chairs perhaps Monday
for Monday on the 26th.
Yeah, and then that we can report out to the full group on Tuesday.
That might be easier said than done, but we can try.
Okay.
All right, let's leave it at this. First of all, SAT members that think they'd like to work on this a little further, Dan and Dan, you plan on spending a little time after the face-to-face meeting in L.A. I'll stick around for a little bit. We'll talk about where we're headed there. And meanwhile, if we can, Ken, I'll try to hook up with you and whoever on Monday on a call so we'll prepare ourselves for what we're going to do on the face-to-face meeting. Is everybody happy with that? Is that okay to start with?
Hey, Steve, this is Mark Carr. Emily and I will try and contribute to that as well.
Okay. So are you happy with Ken and Melissa and I, or Ken and whoever and I trying to work out things on Monday so we can figure out what's going to be presented on Tuesday, and then those that are going to participate, if you can stay around a little later after the meeting, we'll organize it if we can't get it done during the meeting. Fair enough?
Sounds great. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, Ken, so we're going to have to figure out when we can do this call.
Yeah, and we'll do some email this weekend to make it happen.
Sounds good. Okay, does anybody have anything else to bring up for the group at the moment? And then we'll try to give one more chance for the public comment to be made. Any last comments? Okay, operator, do you have one more person online for the public comment? Were you able to hook up?
No, I was not.
Okay. So, Melissa, I'm going to turn this over to you to close this out, okay? Is Melissa there?
Or not.
Okay. Anybody? Is Melissa on the line to close it out? Doesn't look like it. So I think, folks, we know our next meeting is Tuesday. We know where it is. We know what you need to do. We're going to call the meeting to a close. Thanks for joining us, and I guess it's just time to hang up the phones and sign off.
Thanks, Steve.
Goodbye. Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.